Smith Show is up next.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you? Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now. Now.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Happy NAFTA Day to you. It was 17 years ago that President Clinton signed the wonderful agreement that cost this country about a million jobs over a couple year span there, mostly manufacturing. So happy NAFTA Day. How's that free trade working out for you? And we're going to talk about NAFTA because it's really something we should be talking about. It is NAFTA Day, especially considering that we're talking about another NAFTA-like free trade agreement in the South Korean Free Trade Agreement. Another one of these, chocolate-covered turds that are being rammed down our throat by a Democratic president, negotiated by Republicans, but they're now going to, and this is what just drives me insane. Because I'm going to have to defend this 10 years down the road that it was a Democrat, once again, who jabbed it into the back of working people. You know, I've always said I know who my enemies are, but, you know, question is, who are my friends? That's the problem. Who are my friends? I mean, the Democrats have always treated labor like their mistress. You know, they like it's fun to, you know, play while the doors are closed, but they just don't want to be seen public with us. And this is another example of this. At least to me, anyway.
Well, and if you remember, and I do, because it was a bitter, bitter battle, there were some friends who had voted with us for years who decided to vote against us. And at the end of the day, once again, the Democrats were key in passing legislation that hurt the working middle class.
Yep. But there was good news on the Surface Transportation Trade blog today. They reported that in September, the value of trade moved by surface transportation modes between the United States, Canada, and Mexico reached $68.3 billion, up 19.3% compared to last year at this time. That's according to the U.S. Department of Transportation's Bureau of Transportation Statistics. However, the total value remained almost 5% below September of 2008. Remember, the Bush collapse in September of 2008 hurt everybody across the board. And we're slowly digging out of that Bush collapse. And this is another indication of that. The value of freight moved in September between the U.S. and Canada via rail, truck, or pipeline totaled $40.3 billion, up 15.7% over the 1 year. Railed imports were valued at $4.8 billion, up 26%, and railed exports valued $2.1 billion. So again, with Canada, we have another deficit. We've got a lot of trade deficits. The value of freight moved between the U.S. and Mexico via surface transportation modes totaled $28.1 billion, up, of course, almost 25%. The railed import value shot up 44% to $2.7 billion, and railed exports ballooned 29% to $1.7 billion. So, again, another deficit. And this is the thing with these trade agreements. Right down the line, you know, and this is success, according to the rail transport people, because they've got activity, they're working, their special interest is served by these agreements. So when you hear in the coming days all these folks saying how wonderful free trade is, look at it from their perspective, because, you know, these folks, you know, the people, the rail people who cross both borders, things are great. It doesn't matter where the things were made. They're just moving it around. Because we know where the things are being made. The things are being made by the bookends and being sent to the middle, to us, the consumer of last resort. And you look at the fact that just in rail transportation alone, $2.7 billion was sent into the U.S., $1.7 billion sent out of the U.S., a $1 billion deficit. And you can go right down the list and show all of the deficits. And I got to be honest with you, as we have this conversation, and it is an important conversation to be had about this free trade agreement, we have to go back and look at the history of what Bill Clinton did today, 17 years ago on NAFTA Day. Happy NAFTA Day again. Understand that NAFTA put us working people, at a disadvantage. Millions of jobs have left this country, mostly manufacturing, gone for cheaper labor, for exploitable environmental conditions. Not coming back. Now, the Mexicans, they got screwed themselves because those jobs then went on from Mexico off to China or India or who knows where, but they're not here. And for the manufacturers who did stay here, what ended up happening to us is you end up seeing wages either stagnate or decline because, hey, we, the factory owners, we could easily go to Mexico. So you take this wage concession or you take this cut in pay or you take this benefit cut. We're moving. Or, you join that union. We're out of here. How many times have you heard that? So it's not good for us, the working people. It's good for the investor class. It's good for the wealthy. But you and I, not so good. And for the Mexican farmer, it was horrible. It basically put them out of business because, well, we subsidize our agribusiness, which is why all of these trade agreements have some component of, oh, we got to stay away from big U.S. agribusiness. Even the South Korea deal, because they don't want to open their markets up to our subsidized agribusiness. But in Mexico, if you go back and you read the history of what happened, we completely wiped out their entire farming community, and I've told this story before, Mexico had to change their constitution. They had to change their constitution, go back and rewrite their constitution in order to sign the agreement. Because in their constitution, they had a provision that every community had a communal plot of land, so that the people could farm and feed themselves. Well, they had to take that away. They had to take that away from the people so that they could sign this agreement. Because it's always the least restrictive trade barrier. And you can't do for one country that you won't do for the other. So the U.S. didn't want to give every community in the country land to farm, and neither did Canada. So they had to take it out. And if you look at what's going on over these 16 years since it's been enacted, we've seen just massive job cuts. We've seen wages stagnated, and we've seen labor and environmental protections that weren't even close to being strong enough to prevent people from being exploited. Just between 1994, when it was signed, in 2002, the U.S. lost 1.7 million jobs. Nearly 80% of the job loss were in manufacturing. States like California, New York, Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania, states we were hit hardest because that's where the manufacturing base of this country was. That's where the productive base of this country was. And because of this, we've lost a good portion of that. And now if you go back and you look, you know, wages have been suppressed because you got all these companies that are willing to leave. And even just the threat of leaving gets people going, well, you know, I don't want to lose my job. So it's a nice bargaining chip for them. Not so good for you and me. And again, these agreements aren't about us. It's not. It has nothing to do with us. It has to do with the big financiers. It has to do with capital moving across borders. It has to do with ensuring that big multinationals can get into an area and basically take over. And the fact that we are going to lose our part of our sovereignty because we can't pass laws that say, you know what, if you're going to build a bridge, we want American content. We want to buy American provision in that. It's a violation of the agreement. They can take us to one of their trade tribunals who we don't know who the judges are. We never get to know who they are. We don't even get to see the proceedings. But the decisions are made, and we, the taxpayers, end up paying. So these trade agreements, they're not good for average, everyday Americans. Who are they good for? They're good for Wall Street. They're good for corporate America, which is why the Chamber of Commerce is out there full bore pushing this stuff. And which is why Ford was out there pushing it. And it's odd to me that Ford would have been for it, other than the fact that they've done a nice job setting up some operations in China and elsewhere. Because if you look at this Korean chocolate turd, 35% content requirement. That means only 35% of that car has to be either U.S. made or Korean made. Where are the other 65%? Where's that made? Well, I'm going to guess eventually on both ends you will see 65% of those cars made in China because they're the cheap, exploitable provider. And I had a conversation with somebody today who said, well, NAFTA's been pretty good to me. I get to go to Walmart, and I get to buy a whole bunch of cheap goods. For $50, I can have a whole cart full of stuff. Free trade has been great for me. Stop and think about in 5 to 7 more years when we lose another 160,000 jobs, when we have another $16 billion trade deficit, and we have to continue to borrow to feed the insatiable appetite of the investor class, that we have to continue to borrow to keep the country from collapsing. And we lose more and more jobs because those 160,000 jobs, that's a snowball effect. Once you lose them, who knows where we go after that? Eventually, it all comes back to us, to every one of us, through lower standards of living, through lower wages. And, yeah, the cheap goods on the short term may be there. We are now starting to see the end of the cheap goods. Because I don't know if you've noticed that cheap plastic crap from China isn't all that cheap anymore. And what we've done is we've traded a bunch of good-paying jobs for this cheap stuff. And the reality is it's just not cheap. You know, it's like, you know, when the Indians were selling trinkets on the side of the road. You can't make a living doing that. And that's what I fear we're going to turn into. And I look at the maquiladoras on the southern border, and I say, you know, are we willing in this country to go down to that? Is that what we're willing to do to compete?
If I can go back for a second to the Walmart discussion, you know, I can remember when we, in my community, we went through that fight, and there were people who had worked inside of Walmart once we got involved and we got into that whole national discussion of Walmart. And there are people now going around the country revealing the inside scoop of Walmart. And the truth is what he said, you know, Walmart pushes this lower price when many times, if people would just take the time, many of their goods you can find just as cheap and maybe even cheaper within your community. My point is this. He thinks he has it in his mind that he's saving money. Yep. Well, if all we care about is dollars and cents, let's analyze that. He's not saving as much as he wants. That's not even getting into the discussion. If he lives in that community, Rick, he's probably paying higher taxes because of Walmart. because they are demanding. They come in communities and say, we want for 5 and 10 years, we want tax abatements. Now, who do you think makes up for that lack of tax revenue from Walmart? Every resident of that community. Not to mention that they are almost in every situation, they are knocking small family-owned businesses out of business, which means what? Which means less revenue. So in the big picture, they're really not getting a good deal. And then you look at the national picture, hundreds of thousands of jobs. This, and I got to be kind here because we have FCC regulations, but, I mean, to me, in many ways, Walmart is a lawless corporation, in my opinion.
Yep. That's what we're going to be talking about today. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. We're going to take a quick break. Right back after this, you're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Unconscionable. That's the AFL-CIO reaction to the tax cut compromise deal the Obama administration has cut with Republicans. AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka says that the tax cut deal that extends tax cuts for the wealthy rewards Republican obstructionism and also throws away precious resources badly needed for investments in jobs. Trumka says more estate tax breaks for the rich in this deal gives yet another bonus to the super rich, and Republicans have the gall to use the hardships of unemployed workers as leverage to benefit the rich. The AFL-CIO says the benefits for jobless workers and the middle class also included in this tax cut deal come at too high a price. In a press conference Tuesday, President Obama defended his tax cut compromise that extends Bush tax cuts to the rich for 2 more years. He said standing and fighting over tax cuts to the rich would have hurt millions of jobless and middle class workers.
Because of this agreement, 2 million Americans who lost their jobs and are looking for work will be able to pay their rent and put food on their table. This agreement preserves additional tax cuts for the middle class that I fought for and that Republicans opposed 2 years ago. It's a good deal for the American people. A long political fight that carried over into next year might have been good politics, but it would be a bad deal for the economy and it would be a bad deal for the American people.
Was the November jobs report really as bad as projected by the Labor Department? Jesse Russell looks at other findings.
Polling agency Gallup has come up with different end-of-the-month numbers when it comes to unemployment than the Labor Department, and Gallup suggests it has a better month-over-month measurement. If accurate, unemployment actually declined from 9.4% in October to 8.8% in November. That's down from 10.1% in September. Gallup says the difference is their numbers aren't seasonally adjusted. Also, the government's data reflects market conditions in mid-November, while Gallup's data measures job conditions throughout the month. Gallup's data also shows big gains for younger workers. Those between 18 and 29 had an unemployment rate of 15.8% in September, and that dropped to 13.3% in November. The 30 to 49 age group went from 9% unemployment in November to 7.4% unemployment in November. The 30 to 49 age group went from 9% unemployment in September to 7.4% unemployment in November. Gallup also suggests that it's the underemployed measurement that is a better indicator than the traditional unemployment rate. 18% of part-time workers want full-time work in October, while 17.2% did by the end of November. That's the third consecutive new low of 2010.
This newscast made possible in part by the American Federation of Teachers, a union of professionals. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Exposing GOP hypocrisy, The Rick Smith Show.
Everybody, Smith. And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Our quote of the day comes from my favorite gold digger, Christine O'Donnell. She said, today marks a lot of tragedy. She said, tragedy comes in threes. Pearl Harbor, Elizabeth Edwards passing, and Barack Obama's announcement of extending tax cuts, which is good, but also extending the unemployment benefits. So according, if I'm getting this quote right, according to Christine O'Donnell, who thankfully is not a U.S. senator, Pearl Harbor was a really bad thing, I agree. Elizabeth Edwards passing, horrible tragedy, and in her mind, extending unemployment benefits to unemployed workers. Right in her mind, in the same breath. And thank goodness she is not in the U.N.
I have one comment.
Yeah, really. Let's go to the phones. We've got our good friend, Attorney Erwin Aronson on the line. Erwin, welcome to the program. Happy Hanukkah to you.
Thank you, sir, and happy Hanukkah to you and everybody who enjoys and respects the notion of the light unto the nations that Hanukkah celebrates.
What do you think of this quote, Erwin? I mean, given the holiday season, what do you think of that?
I'm a charitable guy all the time, and particularly in the holiday season, and I'm glad that we've given Christine O'Donnell the gift of unemployment without unemployment benefits by making sure in Delaware that she did not become a member of the United States Senate.
Well, let me clarify for a second. She was unable to receive unemployment benefits because she's never had a job.
Well, that qualified her to be in the U.S. Senate, I guess. Maybe one of the few things that did.
But, you know, I'm looking at this whole debate, Erwin, and the fact that, and I called this, and people have, well, how'd you know? It doesn't take a genius, because I am not. We gave away a whole lot to get a very little, and the folks who have been really long-term unemployed, the folks who really got hurt right away in the Bush years, they got left behind. I'm not seeing the fairness.
There is no fairness. There is no justice in this. It is a price too high for a deal too small. That we are once again extending welfare to the wealthy in the name of protecting benefits for the victims is just unconscionable. Today's the 70th anniversary of John Lennon's birth, and I'm of a certain age that causes me to remember Lennon and remember the Beatles and remember Lennon post-Beatles, and I always think on days like today of the words to his song, Imagine.
Yep.
You may say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. I hope someday you'll join us and the world will be as one. And I wish someday the Congress of the United States would join us and dream a little about a future of a United States of justice, a United States of fairness, and not a United States of disparity and more for the super rich and less for the rest of us.
What do you say to? And I'm struggling with this because, you know, I know who my enemies are. I guess my question is who in this are my friends? I mean, if this is what my friends have done, and I'm looking not only at the unemployment situation and the handouts to the very wealthy, but also this trade agreement that, again, we fought back during the Bush years to keep from becoming law, and now here it is, our friend putting this on the table.
Well, we had the same thing a number of years ago when another friend was in the White House named Clinton, and to our chagrin and dismay, he delivered us NAFTA and the North American Free Trade Agreement.
17 years ago today, happy NAFTA Day to you as well.
Thank you. I'm glad someone, in addition to me, recognizes and remembers this is NAFTA Day, and that the Korean so-called free trade agreement was adopted during the same week on the anniversary, the 17th anniversary of NAFTA, is very troublesome. It doesn't seem to me as if the South Koreans who pursue a wildly low-road, low-wage economy at our expense need any help in trading with the United States, given the fact that I can't go anywhere in the United States, not even here in central Pennsylvania, where I have to be sitting tonight, and not see a bevy of Korean cars that I know are made through the wages of exploitation, and why they should get help and special status when what we need, again, is fair trade, not so-called free trade.
I'm right there with you. And the one thing that's really glaring to me in this is this 35% content rule that they've put in. I mean, the European Union got a 55% rate. Why couldn't we get it? Our negotiators that poor that they couldn't even get what the EU got? Or is it this is what big business wanted?
Well, clearly it's what big business wants, but equally clearly, I think the time has come where our State Department ought to be hiring union negotiators to represent the interests of the United States, because if they're as incompetent as it appears to be to have this silly 35% content rule instead of the reasonable rule that the rest of the world had already accepted and adopted, then maybe they need some folks like us to come to the table and teach them how to negotiate, because we know how to negotiate, and we're blamed for everything that's bad in the economy. Maybe we could do something that's good in the economy.
Yeah, I'm looking at this, and again, to me, it seems to be just a backdoor way of getting more Chinese content into these automobiles. And I guess in looking at the big picture, GM had been building plants in China for 10, 12 years now. Ford's doing the same thing. So maybe that is the future of the American automaker.
Well, it seems to me that there's some wonderful incongruity here when we can negotiate an international trade deal that assures that those auto plants in Dearborn and Detroit that were locked up and boarded up will stay closed so that they can open new factories and new plants in China and Korea and who knows where in this ever and never-ending pursuit of a race to the bottom.
You know, what I've been saying is this big handout. I mean, we're really helping the very wealthy by giving them this big handout where they will invest and create jobs. And I do agree that this money that we're giving to the very wealthy will create jobs. My only difference with my friends on the right side of the aisle is they're not going to create jobs here, I don't think. It will be in places like China, places like South Korea, places like Africa.
Well, look, it doesn't take a rocket scientist. It doesn't take an economist. Even a dumb small-town lawyer like me has figured out that the very same tax breaks that have existed for the super-rich for the last several years haven't created jobs. Indeed, they have been in force and in place and in operation during these last 3 years when the economy tanked. And those tax cuts for those super-rich people didn't create one job here for me, and I can't imagine why on earth any member of Congress that's supposed to be representing me and the interests that I stand for and the people I'm privileged to represent could vote in favor of this and call themselves patriots and call themselves Americans.
Yeah,
it's just that simple.
I agree with you. But my concern is I really have heard nothing in opposition. Nothing.
Oh, we've heard a lot in opposition, but it comes from places like Bernie Sanders, the independent senator from Vermont, who has made it clear that this is a rotten deal. It comes from Rich Trumka, the president of the National AFL-CIO, who has spoken out with clarity about this is a price too high. And in recognition of the fact that this not only perpetuates the income disparity from which we have been suffering for so many years between the super rich and the rest of us, but it also assures through the creation and perpetuation of governmental deficits that we are going to continue to suffer. Unemployment compensation is a social insurance program. It's not a gift. It's not a dole. It's not a handout. And they're making us grovel, and they're making the victims of their own greed grovel to get what they're entitled to get what they've earned, to get what they have put forth the sweat of their brow to secure. And everybody needs to once again recognize, as we've spoken of in the past, that unemployment compensation insurance benefits that are paid to people don't go to savings accounts, lavish trips, new cars, or flat-screen TVs. They go for subsistence. They pay the rent. They pay for medicine and milk and sugar and shoes. I've said it too many times before. It sounds like I'm a broken record at times. But the reality is that those meager subsistence unemployment benefits that are paid to people who are the victims of this marketplace are used to pay the rent. They're used to pay the gas and electric bill. They're used to put shoes on kids' feet as they try to go to school and maybe buy them a coat and a pair of mittens as they stand outside waiting for a school bus in this bitter weather we've been having.
You know, I listen to that, and yeah, I'm with you there, Irwin. But most of the people that I've come across and most of the messaging I hear, that's not the tale that's being told. I look at this article in the Sentinel yesterday where the guy is saying, oh, just because the unemployment rate is higher in one area doesn't mean that they're bad off. They could have a really great economy because their taxes are low. So everything's wonderful there. Which I guess was the basis of this guy's argument. It was a nonsensical argument, but that's the messaging I'm hearing. Everything's fine. Big business is doing great. Third quarter, greatest profits in the history of the country. $1.7 trillion corporate America took in profit. Yet here we are, near 10% unemployment.
Rick, it makes me want to puke, and I have to read the article that you're making reference to in the Carlisle Senile. It's disgusting. The message that you get from reading that article is, why should we be concerned? If we have a 10% unemployment rate, that means we have a 90% employment rate. We should be celebrating the 90% and not worrying about the 10. When you and I know that the unemployed are mere statistics to those people, but to us, to those of us who have sat at the kitchen tables and wept together with families, in the homes where breadwinners are out of work, where children aren't going to have Christmas, where people are juggling bills day in and day out to decide, do I pay the electric bill this week or do I pay the gas bill this week? Or maybe do we try to have enough food for having one decent dinner for the family one night this week?
Well, and speaking of that, yesterday I talked about a woman. Her name's Kate O'Brien.
Mm-hmm.
She's an editor for the ultra-conservative National Review. She was moderating this Hudson Institute Republican strategy session. And you know the Hudson Institute is a very conservative think tank. Her quote was this. She said, my question is, what poor of excuse for a parent can't rustle up a bowl of cereal and a banana? She said, I just don't get why millions of school children qualify for school breakfast unless we have major widespread problems with child neglect. And then she went on to say that she believed that if the problems are that great, we have parents who are just criminally negligent with respect to raising their children. And I read that and I go, you know, I remember as a kid going to the cupboards and there being nothing there. I wonder if she's ever had that experience or any of the people who follow this.
Well, I think that you're hitting the nail on the head. She is right. There is criminal negligence in how we as a society treat our children. But it's not their parents who are the victims that are criminally negligent. It's a society that somehow or another can at one and the same time ignore its obligation to our most precious resource, our children, and pass out tax breaks after tax breaks after tax breaks piled on tax breaks to the super rich, and then say to them, oh, by the way, while we're giving you a break on your income tax and slashing those rates, we're also going to eliminate the estate tax for you as well.
But out of the other side of their mouth, they said, oh, well, the debt's too high.
Mm-hmm. Well, the debt's too high because just the day before yesterday, the President of the United States agreed to increase my debt to give them another break.
Yep.
And I don't know what, I don't want to speak for anybody else, but I'm 59 years old. I've been working since I was 11 years of age. I have paid my dues and paid my debts and pay my share and pay my taxes, and I'm proud to be able to pay my taxes. If I didn't earn anything, I wouldn't pay any taxes. I'm earning, and I'm happy that I'm earning, and I'm happy that I'm paying taxes. And I don't mind paying taxes to get service. What I mind is paying taxes to buy down a debt to supply the already overblown wealth of a small handful of people who this weekend from Pennsylvania are going to go up to New York and celebrate the Pennsylvania Society at the Waldorf Astoria Hotel. Why the Pennsylvania Society can't meet in Pennsylvania is beyond me. And they'll spend tens and tens of thousands of dollars on booze and dinners and who knows what, while people who used to have real meaningful jobs in our state, in the electronics industry, in the steel industry, in the garment industry, in the rubber industry, in the food processing industry, in electronics, are without work, without hope, without opportunity, and without the capacity to treat their children with the decency that we as a society owe those kids.
It's an excellent point. And for a couple hundred bucks, you know, like maybe a whole week's of unemployment, maybe the unemployed could go and spend an afternoon at a little cocktail party.
Well, you know, maybe the unemployed should go and show up at that cocktail party where their governor-elect is going to be fated. The same guy who during the campaign said he was absolutely certain that the reason unemployment exists and is so high in Pennsylvania is because the people are too lazy to look for work, and we keep subsidizing them with these unemployment benefits and thereby giving them a disincentive to looking for all those great jobs that are out there.
That he knows are out there. Yeah, good point. Last question I've got for you. You know, one of the things in this so-called deal that they've come up with, personally, I think is a bad thing. They're taking 2% away from I guess your FICA tax, bringing down the Social Security, the 6.2% that the employee pays into Social Security. I think that's a bad idea. And the reason I think it's a bad idea is we're taking money out of a system that they tell us is already in trouble. And you know the Republicans aren't going to want to put that back because they know it's a way of destroying Social Security. I'm curious what your thoughts are.
Well, I wish I could speak to you tonight and say that this is all about Republican bad guys versus Democratic good guys.
No, it's none of it's
but
ever.
But it's not. The Social Security system is a political hot potato, and like so many things over the last so many years, a group of politicians financed by a group of super rich people, happen to be Democrats and Republicans alike, are hell-bent for leather on destroying the social network, the fabric that holds us together. And one of the pieces of that fabric is Social Security. And if it's got a problem, as they tell us it has, with a 6+% payroll tax, what's it going to be when we slash that by a third? And that's what they proposed in this. They're slashing it by a third. I want to have Social Security benefits, and I want to have the same opportunity that everybody else has. When we invented the Social Security system in 1935, and somehow in 1935 we figured out a way for people to be able to retire and get their Social Security benefit at age 65. I don't know why in 2010 we can't. But somehow we have a group of politicians, Democrats and Republicans alike, who are not economists, and they're making economic decisions for us, economic decisions that condemn us to a life of poverty. We shouldn't be talking about how we slash Social Security income and raise the Social Security retirement rate, particularly at a time when we have high unemployment. We should be talking about lowering the retirement age so that we make more opportunities for people to go to work. We should be talking about a normal retirement age of 55 or 60, recognizing, of course, that for people in the trucking industry, people in the building trades and in the construction trades, and in so many other lines of work, by the time one reaches 55, 56, 57 years old, you ought to be allowed to retire and have some dignity, make room for the younger people to come in, create jobs, and not have to brutalize our bodies for 10 more years or 12 more years just so these politicians can continue to collect money from their banker buddies.
And that is a perfect place to leave it. I couldn't have said it better myself, Irwin. As always, great talking with you. Again, happy NAFTA Day, and also happy Hanukkah to you on the final day. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Good talking to you. Good talking to you, Jake, too. I didn't get to talk to you much, but it's always good to know you're there watching.
Happy Hanukkah, brother.
Brothers, have a great holiday, and to all our folks who are kind enough to listen to us, a great holiday season to them, and I hope that the holidays bring us all good cheer, good safety, good health, good luck, and good jobs with good pay.
All righty. Irwin, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Irwin Aronson. We're going to take a quick break. Right back after this, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425.
We can make America better. The Rick Smith Show.
Poor Tom DeLay. The former Republican lawmaker was once so powerful that he declared, "I am the federal government." But some commoners in Texas just cut him down to size. On Thanksgiving Eve, after a three-week trial on two felony counts of illegally laundering corporate cash into Texas politics, the jury pronounced him guilty. Tommy the Powerful is now Tommy the Felon. What happened is that DeLay finally got exposed as an ethically unhinged lawmaker willing to run political errands for corporations that fund his political ambitions. The story of his fall, however, is really the story of a few people who stood up to power and did what's right. First came the feisty crew at Texans for Public Justice, a watchdog group that tracks the corporate money in politics. In 2002, they noted that a DeLay front group had given $190,000 in corporate funds to the National Republican Party, which then sent the exact same sum to seven Texas candidates. This smelled like a dirty laundering job, so TPJ went to the district attorney. That DA was Ronnie Earle. Foes demanded, and even friends urged, that he not touch this case. DeLay is too powerful, they said, to defeat on such charges. But Earle could also sniff the stink, so he launched his own investigation. DeLay squealed, squirmed, and stalled, but Earle weathered it all, and in 2005, DeLay was indicted. This November, after five more years of ducking and dodging, DeLay finally had to face a force that he could not buy or intimidate, a jury of 12 ordinary citizens. This is Jim Hightower saying, DeLay whined that the jurors were Democrats out to get him. But half were independents or Republican. Indeed, any one juror has the power to stop a verdict. But none did. They voted unanimously to convict Mr. I Am the Government.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Time for change. It's time to rearrange.
Keeping the chambers of commerce within their gated communities. The Rick Smith Show.
You can't tell me we're gonna make it somehow. I heard a wise man say revolution starts now. I think it's time for change.
Well, you know, I think it's time for a change too. It's time when average everyday working people understand that these agreements are not in our best interest, and we rise up against them. That when they come out with these tax schemes where we're going to hand billions of dollars to those who already have billions of dollars and attempt to deny those folks at the bottom who are struggling the most to give them nothing. I mean, the Christine O'Donnell quote, yeah, it's kind of funny and ha-ha to hear someone stupid like that say something as dumb as that. But understand, there's a percentage of this population who believes that. I mean, stop and think about it. She honestly said that, you know, today, tragedies happen in threes. There was Pearl Harbor, there was Elizabeth Edwards passing away, and there was extending unemployment benefits. How in the world can you link the three of those together? But leave it to Christine O'Donnell, our gold digger queen. I mean, but then again, I got to give her credit. She has figured out how to be, I think she's what, 45, 47. She's figured out how to get to be that old and never have a job. That's impressive. Anyway, our Borowitz report, Andy Borowitz does some of the best humor on the net. And of course, this is satire, for those of you who can't pick up on it. He writes, President Obama's deal to extend the Bush tax cuts for the rich drew rave reviews today from the wealthiest 0.0000001% of Americans who pronounced the deal a total home run. Thurston Howell IV, a spokesman for the richest 0.0000001%, said, "When we first heard about the deal, we were like, this is too good to be true. But when our butlers read the plan aloud, during cocktail hour, we were incredibly stoked. The 29 plutocrats who make up the nation's wealthiest 0.0000000001% were at their annual meeting at Mr. Howell's villa in Geneva, Switzerland, when the news of the president's deal was first released. Mr. Howell said Bill Gates and Warren Buffett were the first to hear about it, and then the news just kind of trickled down, if I may use a favorite phrase of ours. The president deserves credit for recognizing what the wealthiest 29 people have known for years. Our cost of living has soared astronomically, especially when you consider how expensive it's gotten to control the outcome of elections. In response to critics who have said that Mr. Obama's decision to extend tax cuts represents a change in his position, Mr. Howell said, if I may coin a phrase, that's change I can believe in. And that is our Andy Borowitz report. And, you know, I got to be honest. While I think it's funny, ha-ha, there is some truth in it. There is some truth. Again, you know, I wish this president would have done some things differently, taken on Wall Street a little differently. And like Irwin said in the last segment, it's not about Democrats or Republicans. It's all of them. And it's this corporatist mentality. And for me, the labor movement has always been that place where we could find help for working people, people like us, people at the bottom of the economic scale who are working our way up. Not like the Thurston Howell the Fourths.
Well, Irwin Aronson, I mean, what he's expressing is a lot of us think, I think, for many decades now. The labor movement has been the conscience of the Democratic Party. And by all counts, you hear, you know, and I heard you talk about it, and you said there aren't that many people speaking out against it. Well, Bernie Sanders has come out against it. The distinguished Louisiana senator has come out, and she's actually said it was corrupt. Now, you know,
and someone from Louisiana would know.
Well, I understand what she's saying. I agree that it's the wrong thing to do, but we, you know, that's for a whole discussion. She's voted for some things that she shouldn't have. By the way, I think she voted for the tax cuts the first time when Bush was in office, but that's another discussion. By all reports, Senator Biden was sent by the administration to talk to the Black Caucus, to support this bill, and he did not get a good reception. So there are some people, but I think it's important, you know, as union people, I think it's important to understand where our leadership is coming. And I think it's important to read this couple paragraph statement by Rich Trumka about what has transpired. This is what he said, quote, 2 years ago, working Americans had high hopes that we would ultimately emerge from the deep, punishing financial debacle with a sharp focus on a fundamentally stronger, fairer, and more balanced economy. Today, that vision has dimmed. The tax cut deals rewards Republican obstructionism by giving the wealthy the tax breaks they demanded. It throws away precious resources needed for investments in jobs and our economy and upper income tax breaks that will do very little to propel economic growth. Setting up excuses for the deficit, hypocrites to argue for even more cuts to programs serving working families. It lards the tax cuts for the top 2%. With an indefensible cut in the estate tax, giving yet another bonus to the super rich. Taken together, this package locks in the growing income inequality that has plagued our country for at least another 2 years and quite possibly much longer. It is unconscionable that the price of support for struggling middle-class families and workers who have been unable to find jobs for months and months and months is yet more giveaways for our country's wealthiest families. Millions of jobless workers have lived in fear for months, while Senate Republicans had the gall to use their hardships as political leverage for the benefit of the rich. The gains for the middle class and jobless workers in the deal come at too high a price. The issue we face today is not the lack of power or opportunity. The question is, we have to answer, is this. How do we use our power to escape caving into Wall Street and moneyed interest? And how do we create the millions of jobs we need now and move toward a future of broadly shared prosperity? Well said.
That's a good point. Let's take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're right back after this.
We'll be right back.
radio of, for, and by we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
If you rented at work, do you think you need an attorney? You probably don't. To protect yourself, you do need to know your rights. Retain control. Order your free book, The Seven Deadly Sins That Can Destroy Your Pennsylvania Workers' Compensation Case, by visiting workinjuryinpa.com or calling 695-4722. Don't be taken advantage of. Order your free book, The Seven Deadly Sins That Can Destroy Your Pennsylvania Workers' Compensation Case, by visiting workinjuryinpa.com or calling 695-4722.
I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13. AFSCME members force regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. Chances are you may never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, inspecting an elevator, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
I gotta wonder who is going to be the sledgehammer in this. Who's going to be the one standing up? And I think it's going to be a Republican. And what we've seen is Bernie Sanders coming out. We've seen Jim DeMint coming out saying that they're going to vote against this. I don't know that this is a slam dunk. I don't know that. And maybe this was in the president's calculus. Maybe he's throwing it out there and saying, look, you know, you guys make the decision. I've found the middle ground. Maybe the president is a brilliant guy. I do think he's a brilliant guy. But maybe he's a better political strategist than I think he is. Which is to say, okay, I've heard the message of the election. I've heard loud and clear, we want compromise. We want middle of the road, soft, wishy-washy, make everybody happy policy. And he's going to throw it back to the Republicans in the House. This is going to be interesting.
A little bit the last couple days. So is that a direct result of this? I think it is.
It might be. But you look at a poll conducted before, during, and after the tax negotiations, what it found is that Americans don't approve of keeping tax breaks for the upper income taxpayers that are in this deal that Obama's cut with the Republicans, while two-thirds favor a permanent extension. Now, the Republicans talk about permanent, making these tax cuts permanent. Two-thirds of the people favor making these tax cuts permanent for the middle class, for the working people of this country, yet only a third say everybody should, across the board, even the billionaires should get it. And more than a fourth say that all tax cuts should expire December 31st, which I got to be honest, if we're in the economic position that they keep saying we're in with our debt, and our debt is such a big thing, maybe rethink these tax cuts. Maybe retarget them. Maybe give them to people who really need them. But that's not going to happen because it's not politically popular. Like we're not seeing right now, handing out to the very, very wealthy, not very popular. Not at all. In fact, you've got Nancy Pelosi, who's not thrilled with the deal, saying yesterday that the Democratic leaders will try to draw a line in the sand on the estate tax. Because in their mind, what they're proposing is $5 million and up, taxed at 35%. They're saying not enough. And Pelosi called the provision a bridge too far because it shifts the balance of the agreement pretty much to the Republicans. So it'll be interesting. I think this is going to be an interesting week on this.
I can understand why the Democrats would be frustrated because, and you tell me if I'm wrong, Rick, there were some proposals during Republican administrations that came from the Republican administration that actually taxed them at a higher level than what Obama is proposing. Republican administration.
Well, if nothing happens, as far as I understand it, come January 1st, if you're unlucky enough to die January 1st instead of December 31st, December 31st, if you die, it's nothing. Your family gets everything, no tax, because this year the birth lottery winners have been able to reap those benefits. But as of January 1st, it's $1 million cap, and I do believe it's 45% from $1 million all the way to whatever. I do think that's a little bit low.
Where would you set it?
I think I would set it at the 4 or 5 million area. But for me, again, it comes back to this idea of having a progressive tax code. Look, I don't think someone who has $10 million to leave to their family should be taxed at the same rate as a Warren Buffett who has $54 billion. I do think there should be levels where you've got an estate of $100 million. Anything over $100 million should be taxed at a little bit higher rate, and you move up from there. That to me seems fair, and again, it goes back to my belief in a progressive income tax. The more you make, the bigger your shoulders are, the more muscle you got, the more you should be able to carry, the more you should be able to help society, or as Tom Corbett said, contribute. So I think you should have the ability to contribute a little bit more. If you're Warren Buffett, you got $54 billion, we should ask, you know, a little help, little contribution. Maybe if the word tax has been demonized too much, maybe we just change the word tax
contribution.
You know, like the churches do.
If I can make a comment, that $1 million, I think you're very perceptive in that. I mean, regular working stiffs. You buy a home 30 years ago. It's going to increase in value if you're lucky enough to maybe have a few bucks, invest in some stock. My point is, there's quite a few working stiffs that over the period of their life, maybe they and their wives were lucky enough to have good jobs and their value increased to $1 million or more. I mean, I understand what you're saying. It's a matter of the cost of living and the value of a dollar. So to move it to $5 million, I don't have a problem. But if I can say this, the talk is, Rick, from inside the Democratic Party, there may be as many as 16 senators opposed to this. President could have some problems here.
Well, 16 is not 40.
No, but depending on what the Republicans do, there could be some problems here. And that's as of now.
Well, we will certainly see. One of those things. Anyway, well, before we take a break here at the top of the hour, I want to push everybody over to the Hungry and Homeless .org website. We're going to be doing our Hungry and Homeless for the Holidays event starting on December 18th all the way through the 24th. So you'll have the opportunity to come out and see us anytime, day or night. Just please don't come shake my box at 2 o'clock in the morning, because we will be living in our cardboard boxes there at the giant parking lot, 255 South Spring Garden Street, right there in Carlisle. Again, please don't be shaking my box at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Unless you have a double whopper with coffee.
No.
No coffee.
I might need it to warm my hands though. So, you know,
double whopper with some Pepsi. He might have a midnight snack.
Swore off the Pepsi. Anyway, hungryandhomeless.org. If you want to make a small contribution, the money goes between Project Share and Carlisle Cares. Hoping to help both of those agencies in the new year. But we would love to have you come out, donate a can of corn, maybe a case, whole cart full would be great. Also, if you want to come and spend a wonderful winter wonderland vacation with us in the parking lot, cardboard boxes are $25 a night. You bring your own blankets because I'm not doing laundry, and I will feed you a gourmet meal of maybe a bagel in the morning and a hot dog. Or I've even been known to make a hamburger every now and again. So there you go. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. Right back after this with your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425.
Proudly blue in an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Unconscionable. That's the AFL-CIO reaction to the tax cut compromise deal the Obama administration has cut with Republicans. AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka says that the tax cut deal that extends tax cuts for the wealthy rewards Republican obstructionism and also throws away precious resources badly needed for investments in jobs. Trumka says more estate tax breaks for the rich in this deal gives yet another bonus to the super rich, and Republicans have the gall to use the hardships of unemployed workers as leverage to benefit the rich. The AFL-CIO says the benefits for jobless workers and the middle class also included in this tax cut deal come at too high a price. In a press conference Tuesday, President Obama defended his tax cut compromise that extends Bush tax cuts to the rich for two more years. He said standing and fighting over tax cuts to the rich would have hurt millions of jobless and middle class workers.
Because of this agreement, 2 million Americans who lost their jobs and are looking for work will be able to pay their rent and put food on their table. This agreement preserves additional tax cuts for the middle class that I fought for and that Republicans opposed 2 years ago. It's a good deal for the American people. A long political fight that carried over into next year might have been good politics, but it would be a bad deal for the economy, and it would be a bad deal for the American people.
Was the November jobs report really as bad as projected by the Labor Department? Jesse Russell looks at other findings.
Polling agency Gallup has come up with different end-of-the-month numbers when it comes to unemployment than the Labor Department, and Gallup suggests it has a better month-over-month measurement. If accurate, unemployment actually declined from 9.4% in October to 8.8% in November. That's down from 10.1% in September. Gallup says the difference is their numbers aren't seasonally adjusted. Also, the government's data reflects market conditions in mid-November, while Gallup's data measures job conditions throughout the month. Gallup's data also shows big gains for younger workers. Those between 18 and 29 had an unemployment rate of 15.8% in September, and that dropped to 13.3% in November. The 30 to 49 age group went from 9% unemployment in November to 7.4% unemployment in November. The 30 to 49 age group went from 9% unemployment in September to 7.4% unemployment in November. Gallup also suggests that it's the underemployed measurement that is a better indicator than the traditional unemployment rate. 18% of part-time workers want full-time work in October, while 17.2% did by the end of November. That's the third consecutive new low of 2010.
This newscast made possible in part by the American Federation of Teachers, a union of professionals. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing sanity and rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
That's what they're planning on doing. They're planning on taking it all. They're not even going to leave crumbs. You know, it's like the Christmas story I was reading my son. You know, they took everything. The Grinch took it all. Even the little specks that the mice couldn't get to. New analysis from the Citizens for Tax Justice group. They're saying that if the Obama plan is adopted, it will send 25.4%. of the benefits in this entire package, this $900 billion package, more than 25% of it will go to the top 1%. The top 1%. And, you know, as I said earlier, at some point, being this the worst economic crisis in most of our lifetimes, one would think that those in that strata, the top 1%, the folks who, you know what, they can afford a little extra cheese on their burger, maybe a little couple extra marshmallows in their cocoa. Maybe we should ask them to help out for the people who don't even have a hamburger and don't have a cup for cocoa. Maybe I'm wrong. If I'm wrong, tell me. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425, because, you know, I'm looking at the O'Donnell quote. And for me, that's a sticker. That's popped right into my head. To say Pearl Harbor, the passing of Elizabeth Edwards, and extending help to those unemployed folks in the same breath, to me, should be criminal. It's not. Unfortunately, we live in a free country with some free speech. And as crazy as she is and as kooky as she is, she can say dumb things like that. But how many people agree with her? How many people?
Well, but remember, Rick, I mean, she was successful raising money. She didn't get that money from the moderates and the Democrats. She got it from the kooky right. So I guess she figures, hey, it's a successful formula. And if I'm going to sell a book, I got to appeal to my friends who will, buy my book that I didn't write.
She learned from Sarah Palin well.
Absolutely.
It's about money. And all of the right. I mean, you look at the right wing, hey, look at me people. Because really, the right wing pundits, that's a crowded field. If you want to be a standout right winger, you've got to be nuts. Absolutely stark raving mad. Because it's really a job where you have to continually say outrageous things. And even more outrageous than you said yesterday. So it takes some creativity. It takes some stones. I look at Poltergeist and Ann Coulter. I look at her. She's a genius in my opinion, because she can figure out really, really insanely stupid things to say to outrage people and get her name in the papers. Same thing with Limbaugh. Same thing with Beck. They're only out there to outrage the outraged. They attract angry people. And if they can keep that kind of that anger and that fervor and that rebellion, they can bring in their listeners. Look, I don't want to do that. I'm worried about this country, honestly and truthfully. I'm worried about the direction of the working class. I'm worried about the devastation of the middle class, because I'm in the middle class. You know, I look at someone like Beck or Limbaugh or O'Reilly or any of them. They're just fine. They're going to be fine no matter what happens, because they're multi-millionaires. They're up in that upper strata. You don't see them standing in line at Burger King. No. You don't see them out on the street corner looking for their OxyContin. No, they send their housekeeper out to do it.
You know, to show you how far to the right they are, they're actually opposing this. Now, here, look at this. Look at this situation. They wanted tax breaks for the rich. They got it. They would like the elimination of the inheritance tax, but they got a nice deduction. They also got a tax break on the minimum tax. And yet, here, Laura Ingraham and the talking heads that's far to the right, they're saying, well, we gave too much. This is how far they are.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, look, there's a story today that said that Bernie Sanders and Jim DeMint, who are polar opposites, understand that. Bernie Sanders is an avowed, self-avowed democratic socialist. He's an independent. He's not a Democrat. He's an independent from Vermont and a self-avowed democratic socialist. You've got Jim DeMint, who is as far to the right as you could possibly be, the head teetotaler himself. He's the guy with the little saucer and the doily and the little teacup with the little fancy cookies. That's him. So they're the polar opposites. And what you've got, and they're both against this. They're both going to fight against it, but for different reasons. You've got Sanders, who said, look, you know, this extension of unemployment benefits was a good thing, but not at the expense of handing away the baby with the bathwater, not giving these two-year extensions to people who don't need it. And, you know, he says it's outrageous. And from the DeMint part of this, and he told Huey Hewitt today on the radio, the deal is inadequate because it doesn't permanently extend the Bush tax cuts. It alters the estate tax, much as you said, and it doesn't offset unemployment. So he's angry that we didn't cut things to pay for unemployment, but that we didn't hand out all the billions forever to the investor class. I mean, think of how insane that is. But that's their position. And you go down the far right's agenda, and that's where they're at. We shouldn't have to pay for those working people. They should pull themselves up by their bootstraps. And we should reward those people who have exploited those folks and stole their bootstraps with even greater rewards.
Well, literally what these people want, a guy like, you know, Mr. Vitter, the far-right people, they literally want to go back pre-FDR.
Gilded Age.
They want to go back when
feudalism.
The good old days when you didn't have government interfering. When you didn't have government telling big business, well, you know, you can't kill your people. You can't kill your workers. You have to have safety standards. Well, you can't cheat them of a retirement. And you can't use the resources of this country as your own piggy bank. They actually want to bring us back all the way back when you listen to them.
What's wrong with that?
In essence, no matter what this bill would have, they basically would oppose it. Unless everything was met.
Look, and I'm not saying it's going to go all the way back to the days where a coal miner is killed in the mine and they throw his broken, bloody, lifeless corpse onto the back of a coal wagon and take it up to the surface where somebody throws the bag of bones into the back of a cart and takes it to the home and throws it against the door to alert the family that daddy's home. I'm not saying it's going to go all the way back to that, but that is where we've come from. And these are the type of people who prospered in that environment. It's important to know our history. It's important to understand where we've come from and the fight that it took to get us at least this far. And what's amazing to me is, you know, the more I hear, more I say the Jay Gould quote, I could easily pay half the working class to kill the other half, the more I see it played out before my very eyes. And it scares me because of the misinformation that's out there and the lack of critical thinking that is out there.
Well, you made the comment about you really don't think that they want to go back to the days where they, you know, the miners were killed in the mines and they came around with this big dolly and they just threw the body. Well, I mean, look at Mr. Blankenship, who, by the way, has resigned. I don't know if you're aware of that, Rick.
The end of the year.
You know, I'd like to give a report later, but anyway, we'll get into that a little bit. But the truth is, there were 55 miners that are dead in his mind since the year 2000. Why? Simply because of his greed and that company's refusal to obey the law. And it was easier for them just to get a slap on the hand and pay the fine, and 55 human beings gave their lives because of the greed of his company and principally in his leadership.
Well, I mean, it's worse than that. I mean, it's the industry that has sought to destroy the oversight body that was supposed to be watching it. You go back to this food bill that was passed last week. You know, they still didn't give, they gave the FDA some more power. Mandatory recall if the FDA says so. Up until this point, it was always the FDA going, oh, would you please recall your product? It's killing people. Oh, would you please? And the company could say no. Well, now they got a little teeth. But in the new bill, there's no criminal responsibility, no criminal liability.
You know, it's one thing. It's always amazed me. And it's not just when you get into the mine owners. It's white-collar crime. White collar crime in general, why is it any less reprehensible? And indeed, one could make the case, depending on who you're talking about an executive who willfully misled his employees and stole sometimes hundreds of thousands of dollars from the retirements. Why is that any less willful than someone who, oh, I don't know, holds up a store for a lot of times a lot less and isn't even armed? Why is that less reprehensible? I sometimes just don't understand. To some degree, well, he's an executive and he's educated and he contributed so much to. Yeah, but he's a crook and he destroyed people's lives.
I think you used the first word in that whole sentence, white. That's the key there. The white collar people tend to be white. Thus getting off a lot easier, and rich.
Well,
I've often said, you know, I'm not afraid of the black guy on the street. The person who's always screwed me over has been that businessman with the big cheesy smile and the nice white pressed shirt with the tie. I'm very happy to meet you. Very pleased to meet you. While he's shaking your hand, mm-hmm. he's stabbing you in the back. He's picking your wallet clean. But, you know, hey, that's what we reward. He's just being a good businessman.
Well, I mean, the truth is white collar doesn't necessarily, to me, mean race. I mean, there are some, very few. There were some black CEOs that were guilty of those crimes, but you're right, most of them were white, but...
Anyway, but I got to tell you, I think this is going to turn around, and it could hurt the president if it passes. This definitely could, and it could hurt him in the 2012 re-election thing. I know it's early. We got another year before that starts. But if this sails through, it will be interesting to see where we end up in a year. Anyway, let's take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. We're right back after this.
You know I told you once tonight that you could always speak your mind. You worked so hard to say what's right. I watched you do it all the time.
The Rick Smith Show. Where working people come to talk.
Poor Tom DeLay, the former Republican lawmaker, was once so powerful that he declared, "I am the federal government." But some commoners in Texas just cut him down to size. On Thanksgiving Eve, after a 3-week trial on 2 felony counts of illegally laundering corporate cash into Texas politics, the jury pronounced him guilty. Tommy the Powerful is now Tommy the Felon. What happened is that DeLay finally got exposed as an ethically unhinged lawmaker willing to run political errands for corporations that fund his political ambitions. The story of his fall, however, is really the story of a few people who stood up to power and did what's right. First came the feisty crew at Texans for Public Justice, a watchdog group that tracks the corporate money in politics. In 2002, they noted that a DeLay front group had given $190,000 in corporate funds to the National Republican Party, which then sent the exact same sum to 7 Texas candidates. This smelled like a dirty laundering job, so TPJ went to the district attorney. That DA was Ronnie Earle. Foes demanded, and even friends urged, that he not touch this case. DeLay is too powerful, they said, to defeat on such charges. But Earl could also sniff the stink, so he launched his own investigation. DeLay squealed, squirmed, and stalled, but Earl weathered it all, and in 2005, DeLay was indicted. This November, after 5 more years of ducking and dodging, DeLay finally had to face a force that he could not buy or intimidate, a jury of 12 ordinary citizens. This is Jim Hightower saying, DeLay whined that the jurors were Democrats out to get him, but half were independents or Republican. Indeed, any one juror has the power to stop a verdict, but none did. They voted unanimously to convict Mr. I Am the Government.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters? Rick Smith.
Get way too much. Instead of schools, build prisons and lock the children up. We won't believe those lies again, because God is a Republican.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Understand, this year, no estate tax for the birth lottery winners. The Steinbrenner family paid zero in estate tax. And it takes me back to the first year that we had an estate tax. It was enacted in 1916. You'll remember Teddy Roosevelt was the one who passed it through with the aid of a Republican Congress. And the very first person to be affected by that estate tax was a guy named John D. Rockefeller. And his tax rate was 70% on everything. On everything. And, you know, now we're crying about, oh, well, you know, we're gonna be taxed over $5 million at 35%, or we're gonna be taxed at this rate or that rate. And I've made the position that no matter what the tax rate is, even if it was 1%, they would still complain about that, and they would still fight to get out of it. You look at the Debt Commission, for instance, who came out and said, well, we want the top marginal rate. This is how we're going to cut the – think about this for a second. Current top marginal rate is 35%. We're going to cut that top marginal rate down to 23%, and somehow, miraculously, by cutting the top marginal rate, cutting corporate taxes, cutting a whole bunch of things for the wealthy, we're going to cut $4 trillion from the budget. Well, where do you think that $4 trillion is going to come from if we're giving a 12% tax cut, cutting off 12% off of the top marginal tax rate? Where do you think the money's going to come from? It's going to come from you and me. Through less government services, through higher fees, through a whole bunch of things. Higher local taxes, because the federal government will then walk away from a lot of the things that it is now covering. So I find it interesting that the conservative movement has done really an amazing job. Because if you think about it, back in the 50s when they started their whole little think tank movement, they started their little magazines, they started that whole William F. Buckley movement. The top marginal tax rate was 92%. Think about the victory in just 50, 55 years, where we have gone from an acceptable top marginal tax rate of 92% down to 23%. Think about that. That is remarkable. That they have been able to change the thinking of society that quickly. That we will now stand and fight for the billionaire class who won't let us into their restaurants and won't let us into their neighborhoods, but we're going to fight for them. To me, it's mind-blowing. And as Brian Wingfeld said in his article, For the Rich, a Christmas Bonus in Obama's Tax Deal in Forbes magazine, assuming the deal gets approved by lawmakers, he said in the coming days, it's an early Christmas present for America's wealthiest. And it is. It's here. Congratulations. You are the lucky land winner, windfall winner. Here's your lottery prize. And for me, they're not going to do what the Republicans are hoping, praying, and telling us is they're going to do, create jobs here in this country. No, they're going to take that money and they're going to create those jobs in China and India and South Korea, everywhere but here. Because they're capitalists. They're looking for their highest return. It's a sad day, Jake. I mean, it really is. It's a sad day in this country when you can't get people mobilized around this. And look, the Democrats, I do believe, have given kind of on this. It is a surrender. I guess the question goes back to who are our friends? If they can't win this, what can they win?
Well, again, we come back to this simple argument that, although I understand what the president's saying, there's going to be suffering, but when you're talking about battles in Congress and the all-important issues that they deal with, they're going to have winners and losers, and at some point, the Democrats and the Obama administration are going to have to draw a line in the sand. Where do we do it? When do we do it?
Yep. That's a good question. South Carolina Governor Mark Sanford, he took a little time off from hiking along the Appalachian Trail to do a local TV interview. The fact that it destroyed his, that little hike he took destroyed his political career, that aside, he said that the affair with the woman in Argentina helped him govern the state better. A lot of people at the Times would push against certain things based on their fear that my political star was climbing, Sanford said in the interview. But after the affair, Sanford said, I was less the issue, and the issue was more the issue. I guess it's an interesting way of saying that you got your thing in a ringer.
You mean because he was caught publicly having an affair? Well, of course that was key, boy.
But he's
saying
it made him a better leader. Because it was no longer about him, it was about the issues. And well, you keep believing that, Mark.
It cleared his mind because he met his soulmate. Yeah, right? Well,
Good luck on the trail.
Oh, ye little faith.
Good luck on the trail. And now his replacement, who, you know, when you start going, it couldn't get much worse. Now he's got this replacement, Nikki Haley, which I think is a really good porn name. With the two Ks, I think that's a real good, that's a whole other show in and of itself on a different station maybe. But she says her new cabinet pick, who will run the labor department there in the state of South Carolina, will lead efforts to fight unions, particularly Boeing's effort at the new Charleston plant. And I look at this and I go, this is what we voted for. We voted for people who will work to fight against workers making their lives better. And in fact, we've put some in South Carolina, they're going to put somebody who is anti-union, anti-labor, in the labor oversight position. We're right back to the Bush years with Elaine Chao Chao Chao. And, you know, this is a guy, a union buster from the word go, has fought against the UAW, has fought against all of these folks who wanted to make their lives better. And she's the one. She's the one who has chosen to put him in his dream job as as chief union buster there in the state of South Carolina. Not that South Carolina is a stronghold of union membership, but there are a number of folks there. And I now wonder how they feel about this election, given the fact that this woman is really, really anti-worker. It's just amazing to me. But, you know, that's how it goes. And welcome to South Carolina. Did I mention it's NAFTA Day? Happy NAFTA Day. The jobs that didn't, and this is one of the weird kind of things about South Carolina and most of the southern states. In my opinion, the jobs that didn't go to Mexico went, you know, to South Carolina or Alabama. This Boeing plant they took from Seattle. They're moving that away from
your area, Rick. From your area, Rick, going back about 20 years, there were a couple plants, big plants, that moved from the Allentown area down to South Carolina. Very, very much right-to-work state, anti-union down there.
And you look at this tax deal, and going back to this tax deal, and the reports were that businesses were thrilled. The LA Times reported business groups were generally pleased with the tax compromise struck by the White House and Republicans because it will preserve the tax cuts for the wealthy and give workers a payroll tax cut. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce, or I should say the International Chamber of Commerce, the Business Roundtable, and the National Association of Manufacturers all support the deal. Now, I look at this and I say, you know what? Anytime I see the unholy trinity of the International Chamber of Commerce, the Business Roundtable, and the National Association of Manufacturers, anytime I see the three-headed snake, the unholy trinity, whenever I see them agreeing on something, I generally run in the other direction. Because I know that somehow, some way, I'm going to have to pick up the tab. Whatever it is that they do is going to be at my expense. And I'm telling you folks, this tax deal, not good for us. And to me, I got to tell you, I've been thinking about this. I would have felt the wrath of some unemployed folks for a couple of weeks. Just to draw the line in the sand on this. We cannot hand this kind of resource out to the top 1 or 2%. I mean, it's unconscionable. And as president, I would be on television every single night saying, today, your representative went to Congress, did not do his job for the unemployed. Today, he was working for the top 1%. And that's what I'd be screaming about.
Well, therein is one of your problems, Rick.
And I care about people.
Well, you know, I would like to see him do that. Don't misunderstand me, but the Democrats in this administration put themselves in this hole. They should have addressed this issue probably 6 months ago at least, where they had some leverage prior to the election. Now, you know, the Republicans look at that, and even those that are in the House, they have two more years. They have two more years. The election has just passed. The pressure would certainly be on them if this was prior to the election. Therein lies one of the problems. However, having said that, I still think a couple of the Republicans, if you do it right, I think you can pry them away. If you do it right, but apparently the president is willing to use the bully pulpit. It's a powerful force. And if I were him, I would target people. Let's go after Mr. Brown. He would be my first target. Let's go into Massachusetts. Let's attend fundraisers. Let's make speeches. And in each and every speech, I would show the people of Massachusetts what the vote of their senator has done. That's what I would do.
Yep.
I would put the heat on them every way I could. But he doesn't seem to want to do that.
Well, we will see. I'm going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with your calls. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Family values are more than slogans. The Rick Smith Show.
If you or a loved one has suffered a workplace injury, don't jeopardize your benefits by not fully knowing your rights. Don't be misled by those whose job it is to minimize your injury, your disability, your lifetime medical coverage, and your financial recovery. Order your free book by Calhoun Associates by visiting workinjurynpa.com or calling 695-4722. Don't be taken advantage of. Get your copy of The Seven Deadly Sins That Can Destroy Your Pennsylvania Workers' Compensation Case by visiting workinjurynpa.com or calling 717-695-4722.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made, and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
Rick, 1-888-520-7425. Paper economy. They write food stamps, another 500,000 sign up. In September, over 500,000 more people in the country were added to the food stamp program, bringing the total monthly cost to $5.7 billion. Sold at the top, guest blogger writes, as a logical consequence of the prolonged economic downturn, it appears that participation in the federal food stamp program is continuing to rise. Sold at the top is not a pessimist by nature, but a true skeptic and realist who prefers solid and sustained evidence of fundamental economic recovery to Goldilocks, green shoots, mustard seeds, and wholesale speculation. And the reality is what he points out in this is that you're seeing all of these new people added to the rolls. participation has increased to almost 19% of the country. And if you go down by the numbers, children are the ones most often affected by this. And I think it's a good thing. We've spent a lot of money on it to help feeding people, and I think that's a good thing. And I remember as a kid, and I got to be honest, hated it, absolutely hated it. The most degrading moment of my life was having to take that food stamp, that coupon, and they used to come in these little books, and they look like funny money. They look like play money. And you'd have to take it up to the counter, and the woman behind the counter always gave you grief and always, you know, gave you a hard time because that's what they were there to do. But today, and our producer on the weekend show said, well, my friend found the welfare queen. You know, she had food stamps. And I go, they haven't used that funny money stuff in years. They use a bank card. It's an electronic transfer. I don't know where that was coming from. It was a made-up story, like a lot of this stuff is. There's maybe a kernel of truth and then massive made-up stories. And the story that he was telling was of his friend was in line at the local grocery store, and there was, you know, the welfare queen who had, you know, thick, giant, juicy steaks and all kind of fresh fruit and cigarettes and, you know, you name it, mounds of gourmet chocolate. And the most expensive of gourmet, whatever.
You say cigarettes and, you know, the classic.
And I'm going, well, yeah, good luck. Well, I got this article from a guy named Matt Boyle, who did a DC investigation. This is, you know, getting out there and doing the hard work. And here's what he writes. What can you buy with food stamps? Pretty much anything sold at the grocery store, he says, other than tobacco, booze, and hot food. To find out what that really means, I took my November stipend to Whole Foods, a pricey organic food emporium that is as much a yuppie metaphor as it is a supermarket. My first stop, the seafood counter, where I got the thickest swordfish steak I could get at $18.99 a pound. Also turned out to be the most expensive item in the department. Then I headed off to the coffee section where I dropped $11.99 on a pound of fresh roasted beans. From there, the milk aisle where I bought an $8 half gallon of pure organic goat's milk. Nearby was the cheese section where I found tiny wedges of fancy looking cheese from some European city I've never heard of and threw it into my cart. Last, I hit the produce section, where I discovered a small but tasty-looking container of Chantilly mushrooms, price $13.99 plus tax. At the checkout line, I whipped out my shiny electronic benefits transfer card and watched the cashier ring up my order. The total, minus the cheese, which I discarded at the last moment, came to $51.10. Not bad for a gourmet meal, especially since I was not paying for it. Ironically, my food stamps did not cover the 5-cent D.C. tax on grocery bags, so I paid that in cash. It was the only money I spent that didn't come from the government. He goes on to say, when December 1st hit, a few days later, I checked my balance and was surprised and pleased to see the leftover balance from November had carried over, flush with more cash, more government cash to blow. When I walked across the street from my office to CVS, to sample the opposite end of the food spectrum, within minutes I had picked up $99.99 worth of Halloween candy, including 9 bags of Reese's Peanut Butter Cups, 12 bags of Snickers, and the loot filled two shopping bags, but the cashier didn't flinch. He seemed like he had seen it before. Maybe he had. The government has repeatedly refused to set strict guidelines on which foods may be purchased with food stamps. In the words of the 2000 USDA report, there are no widely accepted standards to judge the healthfulness of individual foods. So he goes on and he lists what he bought. He bought limes for his Corona and other Mexican beers. He bought soda water and tonic for his mixed drinks. He bought Coke for his Jack and Cokes. Drink mixers,
You know, as long as it has an FDA label on them. Now, understand, you can't buy alcohol with food stamps. So all of this stuff, you could have bought limes because you like limes. I've drank soda water. He says he bought appetizers from the frozen food section, Red Bull, and Jell-O and other things. He goes on this list. This is one day. And this is how disingenuous and how completely ignorant someone like this is. So he goes and he blows his $3 a day, his $100 a month, $99.99. He goes and he blows all $99.99 on one bag of groceries. What does he eat for the rest of the month? I mean, honestly, if he went and he spent $19 a pound on a swordfish, and he went and he bought mushrooms for $13 a pound, and he went and he bought some other things, you know, $12 a pound, the coffee at $12 a pound, what did he eat for the rest of the month? See, what he wants you to believe is that the folks who have food who are getting food stamps have all these other options like he has. Personally, if I'm working in the welfare office in D.C., I'm hunting this kid down. Because he writes right in here. He walked right across from his office. His office. Well, maybe he's got a job. Did he get paid to write this article? Let's take a look at that. Because evidently he's got more money because he just blew his entire welfare check. All of those food stamps completely blew all that money that was supposed to last him the entire month in one day. So either he's like Bear and can eat all of that, that one meal that will last him the month, or he's full of it. And this is the kind of argument that I get so often from people. Well, I was in the store. We hear it all the time, Jake. I was in the store and I saw this welfare queen with her 16 kids buying cigarettes and booze. Mm-hmm. And no, you didn't. Stop lying. And I know, and I love this one. I love this one. I know somebody who's cheating the welfare system. I say, really? I got the Department of Public Welfare right here on the phone. Let's call them. Oh, we don't want, no, they're cheating. We should call them. We got to stop this because I don't want people who actually need these programs not to be able to get them because your friend is a screwball. I want the criminals put in jail. I want the people who are cheating the system caught. And you know what? We hear about it. And we hear about it occasionally because it's happening. Occasionally. For the most part, the people who get food stamps use it the way it's supposed to be used. They put food on their table for their kids. They put food in front of them that's going to last them the entire month. Look, at the beginning of the month when welfare came for my mother, we would go to the store and we would stock up. There was never a swordfish in the house. There were no fresh vegetables in the house. What there was a lot of, noodles. A lot of noodles. Spaghetti every day. And that's the welfare diet. The cheapest meal you can get, the cheapest meal you can put on the table, that's what you get. And I would love to have FDA standards. Would love to have the USDA and the FDA say, here's proper nutrition, here's what it costs, and this is what we're going
to
pay for.
But yeah, when the president and the first lady try to implement some kind of standards to do something about childhood obesity, they call them food Nazis. But yet this same political viewpoint is saying, well, the government should step in and they ought to limit what they can purchase. Do we really want to go that way? Do we really want to have a prescribed list? Do we really want to have agents out there making sure
we
that...
They already do that.
Well, they do to some extent.
The WIC program. There are certain things that WIC will pay for, and you get your voucher and you pick up what WIC covers. Because WIC has decided that there are certain things that children need. And I think it's a great program. WIC stands for Women's Infants and Children.
Correct.
And I think it's a great program.
My point is, it would require, if you want to eliminate some of the so-called abuses, it would require more government involvement. Which do you want here?
Well, no, they just want to poke at the system.
Well, sure they do.
They just want to tear it down. They want the simple mind to go, what? I could take my $99 and go buy two cart full of Snicker bars.
Don't forget chips. They always like to say, well, you know, they had all kinds of candies, and they had chips and all the bad foods. And, of course, even if that is true, and a lot of times it isn't true, of course, people who buy it with their own food and they don't have food stamps, they never buy unhealthy food, do they?
Yeah. But it's just one of those things. It's one of those things that drives me kind of crazy.
Look, I know the conservatives, you conservatives out there don't want to believe this, but the truth is that most people on welfare are there less than 2 years. Now, I know that doesn't fit into your profile, and yes, there are generational families on welfare, and something should be done about that, but the truth is that most people on welfare are there 2 or less years, a temporary helping hand so that they can go on and lead a better life. And it actually, in a lot of ways, has been successful. Doesn't have its problems, sure.
Yeah.
But it's not near as bad as the conservatives like to point out. And by the way, there's far, far, far more money wasted. Your tax dollars wasted on corporate welfare than it is to support, oh, I don't know, something. Sometimes I think you people think, although you like to talk about children, it's relatively small compared. And those kind of programs, welfare programs, they help innocent children.
Yeah. Anyway, let's take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. We're right back after this.
It is all about the children, even after they're born. Rick Smith.
Washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous. The salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make history happen!
Making the blue blood see red. The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome to the new dark ages. Now all your life might be thought of in the dark ages. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, you can listen to it there at the website. Or you can download the podcast from iTunes. We do all that as well. And if you're near your computer and you want to watch us here in the studio, want to wave to us on the cam, we do stream our program live every night, 9 to midnight, right here. Again, if you could, this, mark your calendars, December 18th through the 24th. We are going to be doing our Hungry and Homeless for the Holiday event. We hope everybody will go to hungryandhomeless.org, maybe throw a couple of bucks towards Project Share and Carlisle Cares to help with the new year. Because, look, folks, Things are tough. The economy is tough for some folks. The economic recession of 2008 was really a disaster for working families. And the people who were at the margin, they're the ones who felt the brunt of this recession. They're the ones who felt the brunt of the pain. And really, honestly and truthfully, they're the folks who have been sidelined. They've been ostracized and really shunned, if you will. And for me, here in this state anyway, the closing of the unemployment offices was a big part of that.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that now you collect your unemployment benefits through the phone line or the computer, you're no longer a face, you're just a name or an IP address. I think that's really a problem. But this food drive that we're doing, and we're going to be there from the 18th through the 24th the entire time, 24 hours a day, where you can come out and talk to us, tell us what you think, thoughts, comments, all of that. And, of course, we're hoping, if you're going to talk to us, we're going to want a donation. I'm sorry, I don't put up with hate speech for free. You want to come and yell at me, and I encourage everybody who disagrees with me to come out and yell at me, but you got to bring a couple of cans of stuff.
And if it wasn't real cold, we'd have a dunk tank. If we were doing it this summer.
Well, let's have a dunk tank. It'll be a skating rink, and I'll just skate around. You can throw balls at the little thing, right?
Well, on a serious note, you know, if it's anybody listening, and we've tried to reach out to as many businesses as we can, but if you work in a business and you have coworkers and you want to go together and maybe collect some food or even collect some money and come out to our site, you know, we'll give your company a shout out on the radio. We'll do that for you.
Would you do that?
I don't think so.
Just a little. Hey, thanks a lot.
Sure.
All right. That's good.
If I can say this on a personal level, I mean, we're joking about it, but you know, the old expression, I do believe it's true. It's more blessed to give than to receive. When you're giving at a time of great need and you're helping families and innocent children, I think it is more blessed to give than to receive.
And I go back to this food stamp thing. You know, $3 a day. You know, I remember a couple of years ago, we took that challenge. And for a week, lived on $3 a day, feeding myself for $3 a day. And I didn't get $19 a pound swordfish. I didn't get $12 a pound coffee. You can't afford that.
You got the old mac and cheese.
You got, and it wasn't the good kind either. It was the store kind. You know, like when I was a kid. Everything we got was in a white container with black lettering. I didn't get Frosted Flakes or any of that cereal. I didn't get corn flakes or any of that. I got a white box with black lettering that said Flakes. That's what we got. You got cheese and macaroni. That's it. And it wasn't the good kind of cheese either. It was really kind of nasty looking stuff.
Nasty looking macaroni.
Ugly
macaroni.
Not macaroni, the cheese.
The cheese. Okay.
Concoction, that mess that you put into the. Because, you know, you get the Kraft kind, and it's got that nice, bright, happy color to it. Very cheesy looking. This was kind of a yellowish. It was not going there again. But that's the kind of stuff that we lived on. Because it was cheap. You know, at $3 a day, it's a dollar per meal per day. You're not living high off the hog. And I go back to what that kid was talking about. Oh, well, I've got to go, you know, buy $100 worth of candy. Well, that's great. Can you live on $100 worth of, can you eat candy 24 hours, eat three meals a day? If you can, then you fed yourself. I don't know anybody who's doing that other than some snot-nosed kid who's trying to make a political point. But when I took it, I was serious about it. I said, okay, I got $21. $21. How am I going to make it Sunday through Sunday? How am I going to make that week? There was no eating out. There was no, none of that. There was, okay, in the morning, I'm going to have a little bit of cereal and don't put too much milk in it because milk's expensive. You got to make that milk last. So there was no drinking milk left in the bowl. And you had to think about this stuff. And the problem is most of us in this country, we don't. We've never had to face this. I mean, I got to be honest. I had a unique upbringing. I think that, you know, I saw things from a different perspective. And as I have worked hard and have prospered and done very well over the years, I've kind of moved away from it, but I never forgot about it. And I think most of us, we've forgotten that some people out there are really struggling.
Question. When you were growing up, was there anything like you see today, community gardens, growing your own vegetables, anything like that?
Not in our area, no.
Wasn't there?
No, and there should have been. Really, honestly, and truthfully, there was a lot of...
That would
of
have been a very easy way to supplement your diet.
If you could have done it over the knifings and the shootings.
Well...
I mean, dodging the bullets while hoeing, you know, that's...
So they were gonna rob you for those carrots, huh?
Well, I got to be honest with you.
That's a possibility.
I can remember times where we would come home and the cupboards would be empty because someone broke into the house and stole all the food. That is a very real reality for people who live in those environments. And, you know, that's a whole nother set of social problems that we haven't dealt with. For me, all of this, and this is why I'm really not, on some issues I side with the Democrats, on a couple of issues I side with the Republicans, but for the most part, I'm dead smack somewhere in the middle until you start talking about economic justice and economics. Because I believe all of our problems can be solved by having some sort of economic equality, having a more egalitarian society economically, if you will, where people are able to make the wages through their work that support their families. The problem is too often, and a lot of the folks who are collecting food stamps have jobs. Problem is the jobs don't pay anything. And as this recession has held wages down, and as this recession has emboldened corporations to steal back hard-fought gains from their employees, we're seeing more people turning to the federal government for help. My question is, what would happen if they weren't there? And there's two arguments here, and you know, this is kind of one of the internal struggles that I have. Let's say there were no minimum wages. Let's say there were no food stamp programs. Let's say there was no WIC or any of that stuff. And the working class just kept getting squeezed and squeezed and squeezed until they just couldn't survive anymore. And eventually they lash out. Because, you know, you and I've had this discussion a number of times. There's part of me that is anti-minimum wage. Because I think you need to make things so desperate that people eventually, that their stomachs are empty, that their head gets right. That eventually they realize that they're getting screwed every step of the way, and they fight back. Now, the problem with that is how long does it take, and how many lives does it cost, and how badly do I have to suffer in the process while we're awakening the multitude? I mean,
and how does lack of a minimum wage actually hold down everyone else's wage?
Well,
there's a point to that too.
Well, I mean, if you got somebody who's willing to work for a dollar and you need, you know, $5, of course you're never going to work again. And that goes all the way up the scale. The reason people are so dead set against raising the minimum wage, especially the International Chamber of Commerce and the Business Roundtable and the National Manufacturers
Association.
Because
it does raise everyone else's wage.
Because it pushes everybody up. And the unholy trinity there, they know it. They know that by pushing up the bottom, everybody goes up. And that means less profit for them. Look, folks, the third quarter of this year, the most profitable quarter in the history of this nation. Yet we're still close to 10% unemployment, and we're seeing corporations stealing back wages, benefits. Every day we're hearing these stories.
But really, even though those numbers have improved, I mean, the real rate is still between 16% and 17%. You want to factor in people who stop looking, people who are looking full-time and can't find it. It's still between 16% and 17%, which is way, way, way too high. That's start doing the numbers, Rick. That's about 1 in 6.
And again, most of the job losses happened before the Obama economic team. And look, I'll defend him on this. There are some things he's done, and I think I'm fair when it comes to Obama. I give him credit where it's due, and I'm going to beat him where it's necessary. We're going to take a quick break. Right back with your calls. 1-888-520-RICK.
Just make us be brave. Make us play nice. Let us be together tonight.
Thought-provoking, intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class. Rick Smith. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Unconscionable. That's the AFL-CIO reaction to the tax cut compromise deal the Obama administration has cut with Republicans. AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka says that the tax cut deal that extends tax cuts for the wealthy rewards Republican obstructionism and also throws away precious resources badly needed for investments in jobs. Trumka says more estate tax breaks for the rich in this deal gives yet another bonus to the super rich, and Republicans have the gall to use the hardships of unemployed workers as leverage to benefit the rich. The AFL-CIO says the benefits for jobless workers and the middle class also included in this tax cut deal come at too high a price. In a press conference Tuesday, President Obama defended his tax cut compromise that extends Bush tax cuts to the rich for two more years. He said standing and fighting over tax cuts to the rich would have hurt millions of jobless and middle class workers.
Because of this agreement, 2 million Americans who lost their jobs and are looking for work will be able to pay their rent and put food on their table. This agreement preserves additional tax cuts for the middle class that I fought for and that Republicans opposed 2 years ago. It's a good deal for the American people. A long political fight that carried over into next year might have been good politics, but it would be a bad deal for the economy, and it would be a bad deal for the American people.
Was the November jobs report really as bad as projected by the Labor Department? Jesse Russell looks at other findings.
Polling agency Gallup has come up with different end-of-the-month numbers when it comes to unemployment than the Labor Department, and Gallup suggests it has a better month-over-month measurement. If accurate, unemployment actually declined from 9.4% in October to 8.8% in November. That's down from 10.1% in September. Gallup says the difference is their numbers aren't seasonally adjusted. Also, the government's data reflects market conditions in mid-November, while Gallup's data measures job conditions throughout the month. Gallup's data also shows big gains for younger workers. Those between 18 and 29 had an unemployment rate of 15.8% in September, and that dropped to 13.3% in November. The 30 to 49 age group went from 9% unemployment in November to 7.4% unemployment in November. The 30 to 49 age group went from 9% unemployment in September to 7.4% unemployment in November. Gallup also suggests that it's the underemployed measurement that is a better indicator than the traditional unemployment rate. 18% of part-time workers want full-time work in October, while 17.2% did by the end of November. That's the third consecutive new low of 2010.
This newscast made possible in part by the American Federation of Teachers, a union of professionals. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Officially in love with Michelle Bachmann, even if she's batshit crazy. Rick Smith.
Maybe that Mercedes-Benz that the top 2% can buy a new one each of the next 2 years thanks to the handouts that we've just given them, another $83 billion per $83 million per year. So, hey, you know, it's great stuff. I mean, $83 billion. I get those numbers confused. We're handing out so much money. It's just amazing to me. So here folks, have some more. It's rare that I get to do two Borowitz reports in one broadcast, but I just got this one over the wire, so I wanted to share it with you. WikiLeaks has finally met its match, Borowitz reports. That's the bombshell from fugitive founder Julian Assange, who said that after months of hacking former Alaska Governor Sarah Palin's brain, WikiLeaks has come up empty. Assange said, I challenge the best hackers in the business to have a look inside. There's nothing there. Mr. Assange said, still on the run from authorities, which we know he's been caught now, said that once his team of hackers gained access to Governor Palin's brain, what little we found there was so encrypted it bore no resemblance to any recognizable language. The WikiLeaks founder said that his discovery about Governor Palin's brain is good news for her political future, saying that most politicians have to worry about having their private thoughts come back to haunt them, but it's clear that isn't going to be a problem for her. For her part, former quitter Governor Palin seemed to relish her role as one politician in the world who has nothing to fear from WikiLeaks. On Twitter, she addressed the following message to Mr. Assange. How's that WikiLeaky thing in working out for you? Have you seen her on this TV show that she's got? I did. I'm one of the couple of million that I forced myself to go back and forth to it.
Did you see her shoot the elk?
I did. I saw it was a caribou.
It was a caribou. Beautiful animal.
Yeah, I saw her miss like 10 times. And what really got me, and look, I'm not a big hunter guy. Never hunting in my life. I would like to think, now, you know, I'm not putting her down. I'm just saying that I would like to think that if I'm going to hold the gun, and I've shot a gun a number of times, that if I'm going to hold the gun, I'm going to work the action myself. You know, I'm going to reload the gun myself, which I guess is just pulling the bolt up, pushing it forward, putting it back down. If you saw the clip of it, her father got up and did it for her, which was kind of weird. Just kind of weird to me. I mean, if she's, you know, little Annie Oakley.
Do you know what she used, by the way?
A gun.
No.
A bolt action gun.
Well, I happen to see where she actually hit him. Now, they showed, you know how this is. I mean, they might have just transposed scenes, but what they showed was this real broad shot.
Yeah, eventually.
I mean, it was almost like, there he is. How can you miss? He was standing there motionless.
Well,
with
yeah.
This huge head.
And it's got to be the dumbest animal on the planet because she missed like 10 times. He was just like, boom! I wonder what that was. Boom! I wonder what that was. And he's just kind of standing there looking dumb as all these bullets are flying by him. And she just keeps missing. Until finally, you know, she changed guns. And then, I'm sure with a nice editing job, they finally got her with the one shot. And I was talking to somebody today who, you know, who watches, I guess, or participates in, or whatever, hunting shows. And, you know, said, look, hunting shows are the most edited programs on TV because basically a hunt is a week of sitting around waiting for that 10-second window of action. Now, look, I've never gone hunting because the truth be told, when I want to go get some meat, I want to go to a place where I know where if I go there, I'm going to bring something back. I'm not against hunting. You want to go out, sit in the woods, freeze your behind off, God bless you. I just want something a little surer than that. But hunting, you know, like the Ted Nugent thing, and I've watched Ted Nugent's show before.
Yeah, he was on the, well, they showed pictures of him with his arm around her, with his wife.
I've seen it, and you know what? Okay, so you shot something.
Ted's proud that, you know, all the meat he eats, he shot, which is fine.
Good for him. And
I don't have a problem with people shooting deer, shooting whatever, as long as you eat it. But there's, you know, there are some hunters, it's all about the prize, and they waste the meat. But with her, the shot that she had, I mean, the animal stood there and was motionless for about 10 seconds. It was like
posing. Like a couple of minutes.
Come on. And then I heard someone, so that was her father. I wasn't aware that was her father. Great, honey. That was a great shot. Beautiful, beautiful. And so, you know, a little bit like a squirrel. Every now and then they find an acorn, and she finally found her acorn.
Oh, I got it. Don't you know?
don't you know?
And, you know, after that, I just turned it off and moved on. But what I thought was interesting is, I guess, the next episode, and you're not going to want to miss that either. You got the crazy woman from over Reading Way, the one who popped out a whole bunch of units and now is a celebrity. She popped out a bunch of kids,
you mean,
a TV show.
It wasn't Reading. It was
Kate Nate.
Why
I'm Missing, I think.
Why I'm Missing.
Which is Reading. But right over there, she was going to go camping with the litter there, and I guess couldn't make it.
I believe she was. Was she on Dancing with the Stars? I believe she was. Actually, she was not that bad. In fact, irony of ironies, I just went into a store today to get some basics, and there she was on the front of a cover of one of these magazines that you see in the racks. There she was.
So what's the irony?
Actually, she lost weight, and she actually doesn't look bad. And again, she's resurrecting her career, I guess.
What career? Her career? What career? All she did was pop out a bunch of kids who were artificially implanted. That is not a talent. That is surviving. I mean, I'm missing her. Where did this celebrity come
from? You
want to
go back there? Did she have in vitro?
Of course she did.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay. Okay, well, I didn't realize that. I mean, you know, I remember watching them. I mean, the kids are so darn cute. I guess now they're what, 5, 6, 7?
I have no idea.
That's got to be a huge undertaking. 8 kids, can you imagine? Can you imagine the work?
No, there's no work involved in this. She's got people to raise them. They got assistants and nannies and aides and, come on. They don't raise their own kids anymore.
I don't think that shows on TV anymore, is it?
I don't know.
I don't think they renewed it.
I don't care.
I don't think they
saw it when I didn't think watch they renewed it. When it was on.
The kids were cute as buttons, you know? Mm-hmm. 8 kids? You can say they have help. They probably did, but, you know, those people didn't live with them year round. But anyway.
And your point?
For those who are interested, you know.
Nobody's interested in
She's trying. I think she's trying to get have a career of her own.
Well. Again, you know, what career? She was a nurse. And then she pumped out a bunch of kids.
And now I think she was going all over the country, kind of, you know, making speeches about her life and her book. I guess she's come out with a book too. So, you know, I guess that's the first big step. You got to write a book.
Well, thanks for sticking around for the boring part of the program while we talked about Sarah Palin and what's her name? Gosling?
Gosling. Yes.
Speaking of insanity, since we are talking about complete nuts, I saw this story this week since, you know, we're going through the boring portion of the program, where prosecutors have been forced to allow a murder suspect to be made up by professional cosmetologists every day before he goes to court, $125 per day. Taxpayers are paying for the makeover of this guy named John Allen Dottillo, an avowed neo-Nazi whose face and neck are covered with tattoos, including a swastika. He's accused of killing somebody back in 2006, something the prosecutors are calling a hate crime. But his lawyer has argued that, well, if we don't cover up these tattoos, the jury might get a bad impression. And when I read this, I'm going, but that's who he is. It's not, you know, I understand, okay, you don't want the whole Hell's Angel sitting behind him, but the guy's a neo-Nazi. That's who he is. By covering that up, are you not influencing the jury the other way? I just find it interesting that they've chosen to spend an extra $125 a day for makeup and just amazing stuff to me. I think in this case we've gone a little crazy. $125 a day. But hey, what's the difference? We're handing out billions of dollars to the top 1%. I guess if you can justify giving Warren Buffett another $83,000 this year, I guess you can justify anything, huh? 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Also, I'd like you to go to hungryandhomeless.org and help out the folks with Project Share and Carlisle Cares as we do our food drive December 18th through the 24th. We're promoting this a lot because I think it's important that we have the community have the opportunity to come out and help. You know, I've had people often say, you know, nobody asks me. I never get a direct ask. So we're asking. We're asking the community to come out to the giant parking lot, 255 South Spring Garden Street, and participate. We're also going to be doing a blood drive. In fact, I got the news today that for every every person who comes out and wants to donate, donate blood, the Central Pennsylvania Blood Bank will donate $2 for each person to Project Share to help with the food drive as well. I think that's a great thing for them to do.
That's a twofer.
Yep. And, you know, of course, you know, if you bring your arm and bring a whole, maybe a whole arm full of canned goods, that would be nice. Because, you know, as Elaine, the woman who runs Project Share, often says, you know, think of this as a not just a food bank, but a bank in general. And you come in there when times are good, you make a deposit. But when you're having trouble, you can make a withdrawal. And I think that's a good way of looking at it. I think it's a very positive way. And what I like about Project Share is I think they have the right mentality that, you know, someone like me would have a very difficult time at this point in my life going to a food bank and asking for help. But, you know, I got three kids. If it comes between my kids eating and my pride, well, my pride's going to take a hit. But what they do is I would have the opportunity to go in there and work for a day, you know, help other people, help stock shelves, help move stuff around, and at the end of the day, take home a bag of groceries. I think that is fantastic because it allows people to hold on to some dignity and to reward hard work. So, again, hungryandhomeless.org is the site. Please check that out. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
Poor Tom DeLay, the former Republican lawmaker, was once so powerful that he declared, "I am the federal government." But some commoners in Texas just cut him down to size. On Thanksgiving Eve, after a 3-week trial on 2 felony counts of illegally laundering corporate cash into Texas politics, the jury pronounced him guilty. Tommy the Powerful is now Tommy the Felon. What happened is that DeLay finally got exposed as an ethically unhinged lawmaker willing to run political errands for corporations that fund his political ambitions. The story of his fall, however, is really the story of a few people who stood up to power and did what's right. First came the feisty crew at Texans for Public Justice, a watchdog group that tracks the corporate money in politics. In 2002, they noted that a DeLay front group had given $190,000 in corporate funds to the National Republican Party, which then sent the exact same sum to 7 Texas candidates. This smelled like a dirty laundering job. So T.J. went to the district attorney. That D.A. was Ronnie Earl. Foes demanded, and even friends urged, that he not touch this case. DeLay is too powerful, they said, to defeat on such charges. But Earl could also sniff the stink, so he launched his own investigation. DeLay squealed, squirmed, and stalled, but Earl weathered it all, and in 2005, DeLay was indicted. This November, after 5 more years of ducking and dodging, DeLay finally had to face a force that he could not buy or intimidate, a jury of 12 ordinary citizens. This is Jim Hightower saying, DeLay whined that the jurors were Democrats out to get him, but half were independents or Republican. Indeed, any one juror has the power to stop a verdict, but none did. They voted unanimously to convict Mr. I Am the Government.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Your proud defender of the working class majority, Rick Smith.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, you can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. I do answer all emails personally. Also, if you missed any part of the program, go to therickSmithShow.com. All of our programs are archived. I think I got about 3 or 4 years of programs there for you to look at if you're interested. Healthcare, to me, is one of the big battlefronts Still, even though we've passed something of a health care bill, the Republicans have promised to repeal it. So we can go back to the way things used to be. The good old days where health care doubled every couple of years. Well, the Commonwealth Fund is out with a new study that has shown how the costs have quickly gotten out of hand. National surveys have found that family premiums for employer-sponsored health coverage has increased 52% from 2003 to 2009, while median family income rose only 13%. So what we're seeing is all of this, all of the wage increases, and there's some very, very real arguments to be made that while wages have stagnated and in a lot of cases declined, a good portion of that could also be attributed to the exploding healthcare costs. And why is that? Well, as we've talked about on this program before, I think the biggest problem with healthcare is that it's profit motive. That you've got Wall Street involved in this, that you've got insurance companies involved in this. You've got a whole lot of mouths that you have to feed along the way before you actually get to the care you need. And during the whole campaign, all we heard were people saying, oh, well, I don't want the government between me and my doctor. No, I'm just happy with the insurance company and Wall Street between me and my doctor. We didn't get to hear that argument, though, how the insurance companies are the ones blocking care. But what I found interesting in this study, as of 2009, the average premium for family coverage, understand, was $13,027 in the private sector. It ranged from $11,000 to $14,000 across states as well. If insurance premiums for employer-sponsored health care in each state continue to grow at the same average as we saw from 2003 on, the average premium for family coverage in 2020 will have risen to $23,347. And I look at that and I say, you know, I'm starting to think that the debt commission, the little cat food commission who came out with their findings, where are they going to make all this money back? They needed to cut $4 trillion, yet they're cutting corporate taxes. They're lowering the top marginal rate from 35% down to 23%. They're handing out all of this stuff to the wealth class. Where's that money coming from? Where's the pot of gold that's going to pay for that major shift in resources to the wealthy away from our government? Where is that $4 trillion jackpot? Where is it? It's healthcare. They wanted, and if you didn't see this, they want to tax healthcare. They want to remove the exemption, or what they called, I'm sorry, the tax earmark. They want to remove the tax earmark, which means that the health insurance that you may get from your employer, that your employer now pays no tax on, will become taxable, and you will pay it.
If you remember during the debate, they weren't that far away from getting it.
If no, they got remember. It. What do you mean? They did get it. 2018.
But they wanted
it immediately.
They wanted it immediately, and they wanted it, you know, the taxes at a higher rate.
But the AFL got involved, labor got involved, and said, no, that's going to hurt our members. It's going to hurt people, working families in this country. It needs to be put off. So they put it off to 2018. And if I remember right, for a family plan, it's like $26,000.
And they indexed it so that some of their members won't be included. But the truth is, eventually, the ever-increasing cost of health care is going to catch up to a lot of the union members, too.
So I love this idea. I love this idea that we can balance our budget and cut $4 trillion in spending by lowering taxes on the people who have the most money and the big corporations. We can cut corporate taxes, cut the investor class's tax responsibility, and somehow we're going to balance the budget, and it's not going to harm the working class. And I said right from the beginning, expect this. You are going to struggle over this. And they are going to screw us every chance they get. And this is part of it. This is the slowly leaking out of it.
You had two places to go. You had health care and you have Social Security. And then you have people like Simpson, who has the gall to call the senior citizens, who many of them either live exclusively off of Social Security or maybe 80 to 90% of it. And really rely on Social Security as their primary income, yet to call them greedy.
Well, you're the greediest generation, Jake.
Greedy. I don't even want to say what he said. And somehow that's acceptable. Social Security in so many ways. We could have a whole show on Social Security and the positive impact of Social Security. It's not just the fact that they're covering people. It has to do with the quality of life. It has to do with the very direction that this country has taken. That is why the Republicans have always, for the last, probably since the advent of Ronald Reagan, when they realized that they had some power, Social Security has had a big X on its back, because that's emblematic of things that they detest. And those are successful government programs, and there has never, ever, ever been a more successful government. I don't want to call it a social program, because when you start saying social program, you have connotations of something free. No, this is something that, this is insurance. This is, as you said many times, poverty insurance. And when you look at the number of people, literally hundreds of millions of people since the Great Depression have retired, and Social Security has prevented them from going back into poverty, which is exactly what it was intended to do. Not to mention, it's an impetus to the economy, because people are making Social Security, I guarantee you, almost every month they're spending probably close to every dollar. So there is a multiplier effect, and then you go into the quality of life. It probably has had more of a positive impact on America than any other government program ever. And it's emblematic of what the conservatives hate, successful government, which is exactly an antithesis to what they preach, that anytime the government gets involved, it doesn't work. Well, we know that's not true.
Well, it doesn't work when they're in charge. You're right. It doesn't work. But here's the thing, and I don't even know why we're talking about Social Security.
Well, because Social Security is,
I have
entrenched.
No idea why we're talking about it.
Well, I know why. Because if you can't get it from Social Security, you then go to health care.
Right, but here's the thing. The deficit, the debt, has nothing to do with Social Security. Social Security is its own program, funded with its own money, specifically targeted for it. It is deficit neutral. Why are we talking about that? That is nothing. And I don't know why Simpson and Bowles' commission even brought that up. It has nothing to do
with
the
topic. Because they would take if they could.
But what it is, they don't want to pay back the money that they stole.
That's part of it.
That's it. You go back to Bush one with his little filing cabinets. They're filing cabinets. Got a bunch of owl ewes in them. I saw it down in the basement. You open the drawer, nothing but owl ewes. IOUs backed by the full faith and credit of the federal government.
You're looking at it from a fairness perspective. Well, you know, when you're talking about people like this, there is no fairness. If there was any fairness, they wouldn't come within 100 miles of Social Security.
Yeah, well, thieves.
But make no mistake, if they could privatize it, they would privatize it tomorrow.
But I'm telling you, this is the cash cow. This is how the debt commission plans on budgeting their books. By making you pay for your health care. And it's not some nefarious plot. They've laid it out there for you. And that was always the scheme. And I got to be honest with you. We do have to talk about how are we going to cover everybody. Because right now, we're paying the highest amount for health care in the world by far. And getting, well, mediocre results at best. And I know we love to say we've got the best health care system. But do we really know what the other countries offer? Do we know anything about the other countries? And I've spoken to people from around the globe. We don't have it as good as we think we do. So the question is, how do we then transition this system? For me, the first step has to be, you have to rein in the profits that the investor class takes. You have to rein that in. You cannot have a system set up where people are making billions of dollars off of your misfortune. And that's what this is. You get sick, woohoo! We've got revenue.
And here's where the practical collides with the ideological. The Republicans are always, always, always focused on, well, you're interfering in the free market, which is a lie anyway, because we really don't have free market principles involved in health care. But that's what they'll tell you. Well, you can't do, you can't tell a company. I've heard it all the time in the Republican talk shows, Rick. Well, who's going to decide how much is a proper salary for the CEOs in the healthcare industry? Who's going to decide? That's always their excuse. You're interfering in the so-called theoretical.
Well, who's deciding now?
We both know that.
You know, if that's the case, what
the
choice
CEO and his board of directors.
Healthcare to me is not a free market item. In order to have a free market.
You have to have competition.
No, in order to have a free market, I have to have the right to abstain. I have to be able to walk away. I have to be able to choose between A, B, C, or nothing. Healthcare is not one of those things that you can abstain from. At some point, you are going to need it. Now, if you can't pay for it, cash out of your pocket, then how do you, as a society, take care of that? And I know the guy last night who was trying to convince me there's no such thing as society. Okay.
Oh, please. Oh, please.
At some point, we're a collection of people who...
Send that man back to school.
We're a collection of people who've got to figure out how to care for each other.
I got to tell you, Rick, in the whole discussion, I know we don't want to rehash it. We don't have enough time. But you know what? I don't think the Democrats did a good enough idea to say, look, beyond the humanity of the situation, this is important. This is important to our economic future. It's literally important to our military future. If you look at the big picture, because if we don't have health care and we can't compete, we're not gonna create jobs in this country. And ultimately, that evolves somewhere along the line. We're gonna be engaging in fights, both economic and God forbid, military fights, if we keep degenerating as a nation and we lack the ability to take care of our people. This is long term that we have to deal with the problem of health care. If only for self-preservation. Forget about the humanity and people are dying. I mean, that's bad enough. But for long term economic viability of this nation, it is that important. And we haven't come to, as sad as it is, Rick, I truly believe we haven't come to grips with it the way we need to. At least let's have an intelligent discussion.
We will try and do that. Take a quick break right here. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Right back after this. Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. 2561.
That old washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. The Rick Smith Show.
Show 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. The ultra-right-wing Newsmax reported today that Senator Joe Lieberman, Trader Joe, is calling on the United States and other governments to shut off the WikiLeaks by all means. After the website's latest dump of classified U.S. documents, the New York Times reported, WikiLeaks released more than 250,000 diplomatic cables. He said that release is nothing less than an attack on the national security of the United States, as well as that of dozens of other countries, said Lieberman, chairman of the Senate Homeland Security and Government Affairs Committee. Pressure to curb the site and its operators is growing in Congress. Peter King, the incoming chairman of the House Homeland Security Committee, wants the U.S. to formally declare WikiLeaks a terrorist operation. Mike Huckabee wants them executed. It's kind of interesting. Also, Newsmax has pointed out that WikiLeaks, who promises to help with legal defense, has failed to do so in the case of private first class Bradley Manning, the person who is now being held on the Espionage Act charges. He's the guy who actually leaked the documents to WikiLeaks, and WikiLeaks just put it up on the website after going through them. And I think that's the important thing, that he did. I think they did do a little due diligence in not putting out really sensitive stuff, or at least I hope they did. From early reports, that's what I'm seeing. But there are some people who are throwing some money together from private first class Manning, and WikiLeaks says that, you know what, our head guy is kind of detained right now. PayPal has shut down our ability to get money. The banks have shut off the spigots. There's no money yet to be had. We can't even fight ourselves. And I look at this, and I got to be honest with you. This is really scary stuff. This is enemy of the state kind of stuff, where the globe has gone after this guy. And it's amazing to me that, and I take it back to the banking thing. The second he said, going after the bankers, all of this heat started going on. You know, don't worry about, you know, people taking a dump in the woods. Don't worry about the spying on each other with their credit card bills or any of that stuff that are in a lot of this. As soon as you started talking about the bankers, man, that was the end of it. The absolute end of the days. Also, Daniel Tenser, he wrote an article today over at Raw Story that says, you know, it's ironic that on the same day that British authorities arrested WikiLeaks founder Justin Assange on an Interpol warrant, the U.S. State Department announced that it would be holding the United Nations World Press Freedom Day next year. Think about that. Think about the irony of that. While this guy who's trying to provide a place for transparency, while he's being arrested and his organization being shut down and everybody attempting to silence this guy, we're the folks who are out there saying, hey, freedom of the press, freedom of speech, yes, follow us. Very, very nice. And Alaska Governor Sarah Palin had to weigh in. She said that Assange should be pursued with the same urgency we pursue Al-Qaeda and the Taliban leaders. Didn't he turn himself in? What is she talking about? This is the woman who wants to be president. This kind of dim-witted puzzle brain. He turned himself in, Sarah. And if we followed them like, you know, we followed Al-Qaeda, wouldn't we push him into some other area where he wasn't before? I don't know. Scary, scary stuff. But some of the things we've learned from the cables. Interestingly enough, in Saudi Arabia, for instance, which is probably considered one of the most conservative societies on earth, they regularly punish women for violating their religious moral codes, and they've killed their citizens, you know, for any number of things. Disobedience, dissidence, adultery, you name it. They've you know, oh, you looked at my car funny. Chop off of the head. It's interesting now that from these cables, what we found out is that while these strict moral codes apply to the citizenry, doesn't quite apply to the kids of the Saudi elites. Now, this is according to the documents that were leaked. Instead of adhering to that strict moral code, that behavioral code, like the other Saudis have to do, these young elites, they're fond of partying, with lots of cocaine and copious amounts of alcohol and hashish and a few of the good old working girls to boot, because you got to remember, there's nothing says family values like a coke and a hooker party. But that's what some of this stuff has leaked out. And boy, that's just top secret information, isn't it? Because we don't know from our own conservative elite that they're a bunch of hypocrites, do we? We didn't know that before. I mean, you know, we didn't know that Bush was a cokehead. Didn't know that. But Where were the leaks when we needed it then? But again, it's one of these things that, as I've always said, so far what I've seen is not anything I didn't know. It's a lot of things I suspected, and now you have the documentation that puts it in place for you. Anyway, the Guardian did a piece on Tuesday that I thought was interesting. They write, a Saudi man in the capital, Riyadh, watches a TV broadcast of a speech of Barack Obama. Saudis are watching more U.S. sitcoms, dramas, and chat shows as their interest in the outside world surges. This, too, is according to WikiLeaks. Satellite broadcasts of U.S. TV shows like Desperate Housewives and Late Show with David Letterman are doing more to persuade Saudi youth to reject violent jihad than hundreds of millions of U.S. dollars that the U.S. government is spending in propaganda, according to informants at the American embassy. And this is kind of what I said from the beginning. Why go in with the troops? Send a whole bunch of Twinkies. Turn the idiot boxes on. Take away their will.
And satellite, wonderful.
It's a wonderful thing. Do what they've done to our kids. Do the wonders of television for everybody else, like it's done to our kids. It's made a bunch of dummies and a bunch of people who are couch potatoes. I think it's a great thing. That's what we should have been dropping. Well, wait a minute. If we had dropped the televisions, they'd probably have broke. Maybe we could have trucked them in. I had a conversation with somebody today who was explaining to me the new method of reading. That the 20 and under generation read in this F pattern. They may read the first line, like the headline, and they'll go down a couple of sentences, maybe read about a half a line, go down a couple of sentences, maybe read the first couple of words, go down maybe another word or two, and that's all they read. And as you go down the page, smaller and smaller amounts of information. And that's the new way of reading, I guess. And he was explaining to me, and you know, it's from a messaging standpoint that you want shorter articles. You don't want so much writing. You want more dense writing, because you lose people quickly because our attention spans are shrinking. Mm-hmm. And I'm going, you know, that to me is amazing.
Isn't that our society, Rick?
So this is where we should take the rest of the world. Since we're screwed up, we should take them with us.
Aren't there some studies done that show that people that play these games, these video games, and are on the computer a lot, their attention span to zero in on one thing, concentrate on it, have really decreased?
Yeah, but I've got a friend, and I told that to a friend of mine, because we don't let the kids watch TV. I've got an 8-, 4-, and a 2-year-old, and I don't need. My wife stays home, raises the children. And we don't use the TV as a video babysitter. And my friend, who is quite happy sitting their kids down in front of the TV and leaving them there. When I made that attention span argument, and this is how I guess our thought processes are different. When he told me that, he said, "Well, they sit and they watch TV for hours. What do you mean short attention span? They sit there 4 or 5 hours at a time." They got perfect attention span. They're perfectly tuned into that TV. And I say, no, they're in a trance. They're watching constant movement. You've got constant rapid eye movements. The screen is flashing colors. It's flashing different angles, different everything. Every second, it's something. It's a constant flash. And it's constant movement, and the brain is constantly scattered. I go, that's the problem. No, they sit there for hours and they're able to watch it. And I'm going, okay.
Well, that means that he'd have to sit down with his kids and read a book or play a game with them or educational tools. I mean, it is a simple solution, but it certainly isn't the most effective.
Yeah, well, we'll see. Like he told me, well, we'll see how they turn out as adults. I don't know where that came from, but okay. I'm going to take a quick break. We're right back to wrap this up. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time, and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous. The salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make history happen!
radio of, for, and by we, the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at TheRickSmithShow.com. Also, you can email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. I do answer all emails personally. I want to thank everybody for being here tonight. You know, last night I stopped at the gas station on the way home. And I put my credit card in the little machine, and it said, no. Put it in again, no. So I went into the front. Guy swiped my credit card, nothing. Swiped it again, nothing. Finally, after six tries, it worked. And here I'm feeling like an idiot. Going, wow, did I pay my credit card bill? I know I did. There's no balance. I haven't had a balance. So I read today in the paper that evidently MasterCard Worldwide confirmed Wednesday morning that the MasterCard directory server had gone down, and that cardholders were experiencing service interruptions. Me at the gas station. The revelation was made as a massive denial of service attacks was staged against MasterCard, ostensibly in reference to the WikiLeaks situation. So then I turn around and I start looking into it a little bit more. Turns out, not only was MasterCard hacked, Visa, the Swedish prosecutors who are prosecuting Julian Assange, a Swiss bank, Sarah Palin, and a whole bunch of other people who were against WikiLeaks and the founder. And I started going, you know, how easy is it to do this? How easy is it to hack into this stuff and to block it up? And what it made me stop and think about is how vulnerable we are as a society and how, thanks to these leaks, we're seeing that the Chinese have been hacking us for years and how weak our security is. To me, I got to tell you, I think this guy is a true champion of transparency and open government. And you know what? They're making this guy to be a martyr. They really are. This nobody buys this whole sex thing. Nobody's buying it. Nobody. And what I find interesting is the spin that they're trying to put on it now, that nobody's bought it, is that, well, it's his fault that he turned his phone off and left the country because Swedish officials were looking for him, you know, after he had sex with those two women who agreed to it. They both agreed. And all they wanted to do was find out if he had some kind of, and this is where they lose me, wanted to see if he had some kind of sexually transmitted disease. Well, shouldn't you have thought of that prior to the little act? Shouldn't you have thought of that first? And they make these little things. They're made out of latex sometimes. They're made out of, you know, some type of material. Prophylactic, you know, you put that on the thing, kind of, you know, protection, you know, something. Don't you think grown-ups should know that? Which is why this whole thing to me just stinks to high heaven. But they've got to make it about him. They've got to take the heat off of the message. And the message is, look, we've done some pretty crummy things. And there are some very serious problems out there. And I guess it's just part of our society. Instead of looking at these documents and seeing them for what they are, an unvarnished look at our behavior around the world, what we're doing is we're going after somebody and we're going to make them a martyr. I mean, this guy and his family have had death threats. I'm just absolutely amazed.
Well, several days ago, before some of the current revelations, the local right-wing spin machine was saying, well, you know, he's involved in some of these horrible, horrible rapes. Well, now we find it was consensual. And it sounds like after the fact, the government was looking for a reason to arrest him. And apparently they found it. And then they ruled that he was a risk flight, and didn't give him bail. Now in a rape case, that they might have some justification. And from what I understand, he does travel a lot. But as far as this case, it's going to be interesting to see if they can convict him on anything substantive on this.
Well, it's not about convicting him. It's just enough to
sending him a message,
just to tarnish his name and to get people thinking away from, what the reality is. I mean, one of the things that Obama ran on was, look, I'm going to run open and transparent government. Some of this stuff should have been open and transparent from the beginning. We should know how this stuff works. If the Chinese are hacking our system, we should know that. But, some folks don't think we're capable. The Joe Liebermans of the world, who we should do everything we could possibly do to shut him down. Uh-huh. Yeah, I'm getting that, Joe. But for me, I think this is a great step for open and transparent government, which is something I think we all want. Question is can we handle it? Are we adult enough to handle reality? And I sometimes I wonder. Sometimes I think people just like living in a fog.
You could be right on that.
Helps get through the day, I guess, because I like to live in delusion every once in a while. Anyway, Missouri Republicans, according to Eric Dolan, are flocking to a call to fight socialism at all costs, even if it means killing a few puppies. That's right. We're going to fight socialism, even if it means we're going to have to kill some puppies. Republican State Senator Bill Stauffer filed legislation to repeal a bill aimed at curbing cruel and inhumane treatment of dogs by dog breeders. Now, understand, in Missouri is known as the puppy mill of the world. Evidently, they've got the most breeders, the biggest breeders, and from what I understand, almost 50%, if I get this right, almost 50% of the dogs you buy in a pet store come from Missouri. So what they did is they proposed this Proposition B. It was known as the Puppy Mill Cruelty Prevention Act. And what it did is it had some very sane, rational provisions in it. You need to provide some basic water, some basic food, adequate shelter, veterinary care when needed, some space to run around, exercise, things like that in these big monster things. And they said they didn't want to allow any of these breeders to have more than 50 breeding dogs. So you had to get rid of the ones you had and move on. And the fines were, 15 days in jail or a $300 fine. And I guess it kind of went up there. But the T-Twizzlers, they were against it. Conservative groups, completely against it. So this guy has sought to repeal this, which the people have overwhelmingly voted for. It's now his job to go and undo that. So I guess puppies be damned.
Which doesn't seem that strong a penalty in the first place.
Nope, not
$300, the kind of profit some of them make, that's not an awful lot.
Not at all. Five Columbia University students sold LSD spiked candy and a full menu of other drugs at three frat party houses. And there was a big drug bust by New York City officials who bust the Ivy League Coke, LSD, and pot ring. So right here in our own country, we've got folks who are doing that. The LSD was sold in Altoids and Sweet Tarts. So how would you like to? I'm going to have a Sweet Tart, and then you're tripping on acid.
Kind of like in the '60s, what did they used to serve?
Brownies with pot in it.
Brownies yeah. with pot.
Yeah. I missed all that stuff. Anyway,
surely a munchies.
Yeah. Well, anyway, thanks for being here tonight. I want to thank Brett, our board op, for sliding the knobs and the tubes and answering the phones. Thank you for being here and all of our listeners online. Again, if you missed any portion of the program, you can go to thericksmithshow.com and pick it up. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Have a great night.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at TheRickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like a tidal flood beneath the sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous ray. Democracy is coming to the USP.
It's The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
They're stealing down on Wall Street and in Washington, too. You know, it makes me wonder what's a guy on Main Street to do. I've always tried to be